people. Welcome to a very special episode of the Eastern Lariat. I'm your host, Dylan Fox. Striga, still on assignment, doing big things in his world of teaching. And also, if you want, check out our Patreon for our series on Antonio Inoki, our week of Lariat, covering 7 of his biggest matches, having a lot of fun there. And today, though, I know last episode, a big thank you to Cameron Kinchstalker on Twitter for the Antonio Inoki retrospective biography episode that we did. It was so amazing, the information that he had. I wanted to take a special shout out to him and thank you so much for coming on. And today I have another special guest and we're doing another special show. I'm very excited for today's show because it's something that we've never really done on the show. And it's been around for so long and been so influential to the fan base of not just Japanese fans, but also fans on all the territories, all of the sources of wrestling. But obviously with this show, we're going to really take a big focus on the Japanese show, but we are talking about the Wrestling Observer Newsletter Hall of Fame. And to do that, I reached out to a voter. That's right. I found someone willing to come on the show, spill all of their secrets, spill all of their opinions, talk about the nominees, say what they got to say, and it's someone that I'm very happy to have on, a very first-time guest, and I know that a lot of you guys will have listened to his show as well. He co-hosts Open the Voice Gate on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network, along with Iron Mike Spears. Please welcome to the Eastern Lariat, Case Lowe. How are you doing, man?
I'm ecstatic to be here. I'm ecstatic to be talking about the Wrestling Observer Newsletter Hall of Fame, which I am a voter in for the first time ever this year. I was trying to think earlier today. I couldn't remember if I had been a guest on this show or not. It turns out I have not, but I do listen frequently, and I'm very excited to be here. For me, this will be a good podcast for me to put my ducks in a row in terms of some candidates. I've done preliminary research on some guys. I came in very heavily opinionated on some guys, but this will be a nice chance for me, sort of my first thought, big picture thoughts on a lot of these candidates.
Absolutely. As I said, we've never really done this before on the show or really even gotten into this subject that much with me and Striga. So I'm kind of dipping my toes in the water. If the people think it's cool and want to hear more, I'll do more stuff about it, especially on the Patreon. I got to wrangle up your fellow member of the podcast network, Gerard Detroli. I got to get him on. He's putting Sanshiro Takagi on the ballot. He's going wild. I've seen what he's been doing on his ballot. I've got to confront him about some of his decisions, but only in good fun, though. I love that you guys, as I was saying, I told you off the air, I think that the people that deserve to have the ballot are the ones that really take it serious and put effort into it and the research that goes along with it. I've followed the Observer Hall of Fame from a distance for years now. It's something that I think is a great concept. I really love the idea of the Hall of Fame. And I've always said, because I think you'll always see people nitpick on it right away. And you already see it sometimes with especially the Japanese ballot. We will see. And we're going to talk about the U.S. ballot, too, just as a special little bonus for everybody. That's going to be a little bit more lighthearted, I would say. But we're going to get into everything here. But on the Japanese ballot, you can see that some people are like, oh, this guy doesn't belong here or something like that. I've always said that the true value of the Hall of Fame is not even necessarily the hall itself, but the ability to have discussions on these legendary performers in a new light, in a distinct light that I think we wouldn't have otherwise. So to me, that's actually my favorite part of the Hall of Fame isn't even just the inductees per se. It's the conversations and the talk leading up to it, in my opinion.
I completely agree. You know, I think the work that the Voices of Wrestling flagship guys do is tremendous. Alan Forel, who, you know, I'm a big fan of everything he does. He normally has a very strong voice in these discussions. Chris Zellner oftentimes will offer a perspective on wrestlers that I'm entirely unfamiliar with, and I really enjoy the work that he does here. But I'm somebody that's been following the Hall of Fame discussion since probably 2014, and I've campaigned hard to get a ballot for a number of years now. And given how loaded the modern Japan section is, I'm very excited to have a say and hopefully who goes in and who doesn't.
And you do have a say. We all have our abilities to campaign and stuff. Even if you don't have a vote, I've seen a ton of people put up articles and things campaigning for different candidates in all the regions, really. So, you know, we're going to have a good shot here, and I'm really glad to have you on. Like I said, it's really an honor to have an actual voter on, because your vote doesn't, in fact, count. Maybe I'll try and change your mind on some things and try and campaign for my own favorites and try and steal your votes. But no, so with you, though, I think everybody knows, if they know you and they know your history for years now, even before you were on the podcast, even when you were just writing and stuff, they know that you are a Dragon Gate fan through and through. That is your bread and butter. And they're on a really big upswing right now. We were talking off the air about how excited we both are about their shows that they've been doing lately and where they're going in the future as well. I've covered it on the Patreon too. Really love Dragon Gate, what they're doing right now. So here's how I'm going to do it. I have the ballot in front of me. I'm going to bookend this with Dragon Gate guys, because there's two obvious candidates, I would say, that are Dragon Gates. I'm going to let you pick. One of them is going to be the first candidate, and one of them is going to be the last, between Shima and Shingo Takagi, both on the ballot here. So which one do you want to cover first, and the other one will be our last for the Japan?
I want to start with the man that I think has the strongest candidacy of anybody in the Japan or modern U.S. and Canada section, which we're going to be talking about today, and that is Shima. I don't think there is a person listed that has the credentials that Shima has, and the fact that he's been on the ballot since 2015 and is not in yet, I think is absolutely maddening.
Yeah, you know, Shima, he's a guy that he's been around for so long, you know, and so you definitely cannot – and oh, just to say real quick too, one of the big things about the ballot that we're talking about, the kind of three main categories that everyone talks about, is drawing power, in-ring candidates, and influence. So you have all of that, and you want to have some longevity too. So you want to have those three candidates, and that's kind of how we look at it. I think traditionally most people kind of break things down into that fashion. And definitely longevity, he hasn't. He's been around since the 90s, and really been a guy that was a huge part of Toriumon and Dragon Gate going forward, obviously. Has big moments throughout his career, and he's a guy that's been trusted with big moments. Obviously, I think when you look at the Observer itself, I was looking at a lot of the Observer awards for these candidates. I'll kind of break down some stats there. You obviously, it starts with the match of the year he was a part of in 2006 with Blood Generation versus Doofixer. That's a match everybody knows from Ring of Honor, Super Card of Honor. A heavily influential match as well. Everyone points to that. He has that. He was a top 10 in Dez Flair in 2012. He's got a few matches on Cage Match over 9. I like that too, because instead of just putting what everybody thinks are just singularly, it's kind of a collective vote. So you see that, you see he has matches there. You know, he's a 3-time Open the Dream Gate champion, and his 07 run started when he beat Jushin Liger in the Kobe World main event. He was a 5-time Open the Twin Gates champions, which is tag team and Dragon Gate. 12-time Triangle Gate and Trios. He carnied $1 million out of OWE for his contest as well. If there was a Carney Hall of Fame, he's a first ballot guy, I have to say. But he did do that. He was an integral part, too, of Great, the company now, Gleet, whatever you want to call it. He was a big part of getting that off of the ground with bringing in Lindemann and T-Hawk and himself, obviously. They made waves after they left Dragon Gate with DDT and Wrestle 1. And he showed, and they've showed, the ability to boost them even after he left Dragon Gate. Even now, even this year, he was in New Japan and got a pretty decent run in the New Japan Cup. And the fans reacted pretty strongly to him. So with all of that said, you know, we're just kind of break this down. As I said, I kind of broke it down into three candidates. What do you see? You said he has the strongest candidacy on either ballot, Japan or U.S. Where do you feel like he's at in terms of drawing power, in-ring, and influence as well?
I think the special thing about Shima is that he excels in all three categories, whereas, you know, somebody like Tomohiro Ishii might have a better in-ring resume, and somebody like Tetsuya Naito was obviously a bigger box office draw, and somebody, if you shift to America, is like CM Punk, might have a bit more influence, which might tip my hand as to what I think of Punk as well. Nobody is able to check all three boxes in the way that Shima is, and I thought it was really interesting that you led off with longevity as being his argument, because I've been thinking a lot recently about the way that we consume things, and not even wrestling fans with wrestling, I think just people with media, in the way that we are beaten over the head with something new every second of the day, and ultimately none of it sticks. And I've hit a point recently really when I was working with Alan Forel and my podcast co-host Mike Spears last year, we were doing, you know, our own Greatest Wrestler Ever project. I hit a point where it just dawned on me that, you know, Dragon Gate and Toriumon have been around for over 20 years now, and I don't think that computes in people's heads. I still think they are widely considered, like, the default setting when you think about Dragon Gate is young upstart promotion, and that's just not true at this point. They are a mainstay entity in Japanese wrestling that have been around for generations and are showing no signs of slowing down either. You know, the entire industry has suffered during the pandemic to such a tremendous degree, Dragon Gate as well, but in terms of some of their competition, Dragon Gate has been able to keep their head above water, and at times it hasn't been easy, but nevertheless they're still floating out of the abyss right now, which is a positive, because there are people that are companies rather that are getting swallowed up by the abyss. Shima's been around for over 20 years now, closing in on 25. He debuted in 1997, has been wrestling in Japan full-time since 1998. He's closing in on 25 years, and I just don't think people think about him or think about, you know, a Masaki Mochizuki or Susumu Yokosuka or, you know, a Yamato or a Shingo Takagi as guys that have been around for, you know, if not 20 years, close to it. And that really hit me doing Greatest Wrestler Ever stuff last year, where if you're somebody like me that thinks, you know, of Shima or Mochizuki or Susumu as these all-time great wrestlers, they're not only all-time great wrestlers because they had a 3 or 4 year run. For some of these guys, they've been consistently great for 20 years now, and I think that deserves to be rewarded. So Shima obviously has that longevity, and with that longevity comes power at the box office. You know, he and Magnum Tokyo were the two stars that Toriumon was founded on. I think it's really important that people realize that from their first show, January 31st, 1999, Toriumon and Dragon Gate have always been a successful company at the box office. They do not run as many large-scale shows as a NOAH or a New Japan or even really an All Japan. You know, Dragon Gate runs 5 big shows a year, their biggest being in Kobe, Cannon Hall, in July. But this is a company that has always drawn well in Tokyo. They have always drawn well in Osaka. They have always drawn well in their home base. And as time has gone on, the specialty of Dragon Gate is, again, not loading up on these shows where they can say, oh, we put, you know, 14,000 in Budokan. And obviously it would be great if they could do that. They're not at that size. But the thing about Dragon Gate that I often think, and I'll mention them by name, but I think that pro wrestling NOAH fans fail to understand, is that Dragon Gate is going from village to village to village in Japan, and they are drawing a few hundred fans here, a few hundred fans there, and that is why we see this continuous influx of talent into their dojo, is that for some of these people living on the outskirts of this country, the wrestling that they know is Dragon Gate, because Dragon Gate is the wrestling that comes to them. And for years and years and years, basically from 1999 when they debuted until 2013 when Shingo beat him for the Open the Dream Gate title, Shima was the face of this promotion. When you thought of Dragon Gate, you thought of Shima. He had a few successful years, you know, 2013 to 2017. He was still obviously a very viable entity in this promotion. It's not like he waned. He was just phased out of the main event scene. And then once he split, and I think this is the really interesting part of Shima's career, once he left Dragon Gate, it's really important to note that he was the only thing, he, T-Hawk, and L-Lenim and the Strong Hearts combined, they were the only thing that ever popped a number in Wrestle 1, anything substantial. They drew in DDT as soon as they came in there. They were slated, and I don't think most people realize this, but they were actually going to move to Mexico in 2020 and be full-time in AAA, and they were slated to have this huge push in Mexico on top of working AEW and other various U.S. indies. That was sort of their game plan, and COVID completely derailed that. But when Shima left Dragon Gate, his drawing power didn't stop. Now, we've seen it slow down over time, and I'm not as bullish on Gleed as others are, but ultimately, Shima as a name still means something. So we're looking at 20-plus years of being a box office draw, and I don't think people fully process that, let alone his influence and his in-ring candidacy, which we can talk about in just a second.
Yeah, you know, I think it's very interesting when you look at Shima. When you look at Dragon Gate, here's how I feel kind of about them and how I felt talking to people over the years. Because if you look at the history of wrestling, obviously the pandemic is very noteworthy now, but even in the 2000 years, there was a, you know, it was a drop-off, you know, like when it comes to fan bases in terms of New Japan, NOAH, things were not going well by the end of the 2000s. But if you look at Dragon Gate over the years, whether there's been ebbs and flows, ups and downs, pretty much every year, Dragon Gate has always been that consistent promotion. Up and down, across, no matter what's going on. The Dragon Gate fans are, to me, among the most loyal fans. I don't think they're the same fan base, even as a, you know, a New Japan or a NOAH or anything like that.
Oh, they're not.
Yeah, exactly. You know, I kind of look at them as a different fan base, but they're very loyal. Like, there's the ups and downs have not been there for Dragon Gate the way they have been for others. So, with all the years that Shima was there, there was never any time you could point to and be like, ah, like, things really tanked now. Obviously, things have changed a little bit in later years. I think there's been some big changes, especially when he left, along with, you know, Strong Hearts, and also Shingo was on the way out as well, all around the same time. I think things did change a little bit, and the pandemic obviously changed things. But I do think that you have to credit the Dragon Gate guys for having this family kind of vibe for the product, to where the fans really have stayed loyal to it no matter what ups and downs there are in the overall scene or economy or anything like that.
I'm very glad you mentioned that, because the real noticeable dip in terms of Dragon Gate's attendance is in 2018 when Shima left, and that summer – part of that was the business change where they started using real attendance numbers, so we will never know the exact impact that Shima leaving had, but we do know that Shima leaving had an absolute impact, and it took Dragon Gate a while to fully recalibrate and for things to be okay in a post Shima universe. But no, they've been consistent. You know, they are a promotion that caters a lot to families at this point. You know, the young women that flocked to Toriumon and Dragon Gate shows in the early 2000s, they are now mothers and they are taking their children to these shows. So that, you know, especially pre-COVID, that was such a great thing, I thought, was that you would see these Korakuen Hall crowds, and it was families of four. It was a mom and dad and two kids lined up for Dragon Gate action in Korakuen Hall. And Shima was, you know, again, the face of that promotion. That's not even counting, and I'll talk about this especially with Shingo, but that's not counting Shima as an international draw, where, you know, Dragon Gate USA, which has its flaws to say the least, as somebody that rewatched every Dragon Gate USA show at the start of the pandemic, I've been scarred for life by some of that stuff. But in Ring of Honor and Dragon Gate USA and PWG, and then in Europe, you know, Shima was a guy that was used to sell tickets, and he absolutely did that. So for a draw, you know, I'm very much a believer that drawing should be contextualized, and that somebody like, let's use the example of Samoa Joe in Ring of Honor. To me, Joe clearly brought on eyeballs to Ring of Honor that would not have been there if they were not for him. And somebody could say, oh, well, it was 800 fans to an armory. It wasn't Madison Square Garden. Who cares? And I think that is it's completely the wrong way of looking at it. I think Dragon Gate's fan base and the way that they approach business is drastically different than NOAH or New Japan or All Japan, and they should be rewarded for that and not penalized, because within the context of the promotion, for 20 years, Shima did everything possible for that company to help them grow.
Yeah, that's another thing I was about to ask, because I think that's an obvious criticism, is when you look at the Hall of Fame and the guys that have been there. You know, like you said, they're going to point to the big, big, big shows, the big houses, the Tokyo Domes and things like that, which Dragon Gate never really had, and Shima never really had to his name. But on the level that he was at, you could say that he definitely made an impact, both in Dragon Gate and after he left as well. He continues to this day. So the impact is there, even though I think some people always kind of lean towards that old school kind of thinking of like, hey, it's not 25,000 people, you know, or whatever he was in there. You know, so do you feel like that's going to impact him in the voting?
Yeah, this perhaps will sound ignorant, but I just don't think people understand what Dragon Gate is, and yeah. I don't think people necessarily care to learn. I mean, that's, you know, I was having a conversation with somebody this afternoon, SB Kento right now, who I think, and I've said since his first match, is a prodigy and somebody who will one day, you know, could be the next Shima of Dragon Gate. SB Kento's in America right now, and he's struggling to get bookings. And it made me realize that although I knew that, you know, Dragon Gate interest in America was certainly on the downturn compared to where it was in 2015 and 2016, the brand name itself is actually in worse shape than I thought. And so I'm not bullish about Shima's chances to get in. even though, like I said, he's the strongest candidate on the ballot. And I really look at, you know, his post-Dragonite stuff, the immediate aftermath, 2018 to 2019, everything through the start of COVID, as being a massive win for him. I voted Shima as my Flair Thez winner in 2018 because I watched this guy leave the comfort and safety of Dragon Gate, and he went to DDT and he popped numbers, and he went to Wrestle 1 and popped numbers, and he went to all of these other places, and there was a noticeable uptick when Shima and his Stronghearts friends were there. And then you look at his influence, and if you're ready for that, I'd love to talk about his influence.
Sure, yeah, let's go to the influence there.
It's, to me, this is where he shines brightest. There is no Ricochet without Shima. Matt Sydal is not where he is without Shima. Jack Evans does not have the career he has without Shima. Rich Swann does not have the career he has without Shima. The Young Bucks do not have their career without Shima. Every foreigner that has come over to Dragon Gate, really with the exception of Pac, because my understanding of that has always been that both in storyline and behind the scenes, he was really more of a Dragon Kid disciple, and that he and Dragon Kid have a much closer relationship than Pac does with Shima. All of these guys that came over all credit Shima with being a guy that took them under their wings, and if you look at, you know, look at Ricochet, look at where he was before his first Dragon Gate tour, look at where he was a year later. Shima makes these wrestlers better. It's not an accident that he was on the original AEW roster. 15 years before that, the Young Bucks were brought over to Japan. They feel like they owed Shima something because of the way that he changed their careers. His influence is so vast and so broad. I don't think most people realize the amount of stuff, like Shima's moves, that have been stolen from him over the years. He is in the fabric of every corner of the wrestling world, and I don't think most people realize it.
How many people do the Meteora these days?
It's countless. It's, you know, yeah. it's the Meteora. It's rolling into a backstabber the way he does. You know, he technically stole a dive sequence from El Hijo de Santo, but I think more people are stealing that from Shima now than they are Santo. Like, there's just so many things that he does on top of, you know, what's more important, the names that he's influenced. You turn on wrestling every Monday and Wednesday night, there's Shima influence on TV.
Yeah, and you could definitely point to that. I think that's probably one of his bigger calling cards for this kind of Hall of Fame, is that, you know, even if you're not super familiar with him or anything like that, I think you have to consider, you know, he has to be considered a big reason for the working style that he helped popularize become so prevalent. I think that, again, to bring back to that One Generation New Fixer match, I think that was, like, super influential just as a match. You could see the style change into more of the Dragon Gate style get mixed into the American style, indie style, even more than it was before. I think that he's a very influential guy. Overall, and you know, you have to think when you look at his wrestling, again, in ring is always subjective, but where would you say that his case is with in ring?
When I did my Greatest Wrestler Ever project in 2021, like I said, with Alan and Mike Spears, and I can find the exact ranking right here, you know, I consider him to be in the upper echelon of wrestlers ever. He's not somebody that I would vote for on in-ring work alone, but I did have him at 27 in my 100 Greatest Wrestler Ever list of all time in 2021. The big knock on him is that he lacks great singles matches, which I don't necessarily think is true. I'm also not really worried about that when it comes to Dragon Gate, but he has, you know, a handful of Shingo matches that are really strong. He has a handful of Mochizuki matches that are really strong. He's got a match with Doi that I love. He's got matches with Tozawa that I love. And he also has five-star matches, in my opinion. All of those are multi-man matches, but all of those are matches that he played a vital part in. And I have a hard time buying any sort of knock on somebody's in-ring candidacy when they have five matches that I have at 5 stars.
Yeah, you know, and he was a guy that he's wrestled all over. He had his run in the U.S. You mentioned DG USA. Even before that, he was in PWG as well. Had a match with Brian Danielson, actually, in PWG as well. Even up to the past year, remember, in AEW had a singles match with Omega a couple of years ago. You know, something like Takeshita, DDT, after he left DG, they had a really quick match there. He's a guy that's been around and faced a variety of opponents, and a lot of times I think it says something when you see a guy like him to look at, because I think you know, when you look at him, he's wrestled big, big names everywhere he's went. It's not like he's been wrestling goofballs. In New Japan, he wrestled Okada this year. You know, so that tells you where they see him at, the people running these companies, I would say. I guess the only thing I will kind of throw to you on Shima here is that, so we've talked about him, and I think that you've made very interesting points and good points all throughout. Do you say, when you look at the drawing power, in-ring, I think you have to be fair and say he has a case through greatness plus longevity. Again, maybe not something you could say, he's a no-brainer in-ring guy, it doesn't even matter about the rest. You know, because the rules of the Observer say to all the fans out there, if you're not super familiar with the Observer rules, they say you have to have two of the three at a Hall of Fame level or one category so overwhelmingly strong that it could get you in, which is definitely going to be prevalent with somebody we're going to talk about in a little bit. But you see him here. What do you say to the people, despite all of what you said and the correct points that you made, really? Do you think that there's going to be guys, again, just to kind of bring this back to what I said earlier, will they say, okay, yeah, Case, you're right. He did make a difference in all of these companies, and he did influence a lot of people. But at the end of the day, is that good enough when that drawing power that he had was more on a non-national or non-global scale? It was more on a smaller company scale. Do you think that some people think like that to this day and they're going to try and use that against him to say he didn't draw those big, you know, New Japan, WWE, AEW style shows? And so it's not a Hall of Fame level because of where he was at, the size of the company he was in.
Oh, I mean, I think people think that anyways, and I think that's such a narrow-minded view of looking at box office, and I also think the people that think that are the same people that grossly underrate the success that Dragon Gate has had, and that's kind of why I want to hammer the point home that they've been a success since their first show. You know, DDT has done amazing things, but DDT had to crawl their way up through the ranks of Japanese sleaze. Toriyama and Dragon Gate have never had that issue, and although this is not really the time or place to argue this, I think there's a very credible argument that can be made that since about 2007 or so, while the number one has shifted from Noah to New Japan over that time, Dragon Gate has been the consistent number two in this country for almost 15 years, and undoubtedly over the last decade, when New Japan ascended, Dragon Gate took that number two spot, and while DDT has come close, and while people really think that Stardom is on the cusp of becoming that number two promotion, nobody, in my opinion, with the evidence that is there, not numbers, but factual data, nobody has come for that number two spot. So I think the people that think that are very narrow-minded. I think they're looking at drawing in just a different way than I do, which I have to respect that. I can't entirely change somebody's philosophy there. But again, I think context really matters. You know, it's one thing to look at a spreadsheet full of numbers and go, this person was a draw, this person wasn't. But I really think there's a deeper meaning behind some of those houses.
And you also have to think of the way that modern standards have changed, you know, when it comes to drawing power as well with a lot of these guys. And that's one of the flaws, I would say, with the Observer Hall of Fame is that sometimes, especially in the American category, I think it's like way more even prevalent, where you're trying to judge certain guys from a whole different era to these modern guys. So it's not even a positive or negative or even the same. It's just not the same. And
The idea of going generation to generation trying to compare those numbers is, I often think, times an ill-fated way of looking at things. I mean, I can speak from my personal life. I work adjacent to the music industry, and there has never been a more difficult time in this world to sell concert tickets, because not only is the entertainment dollar stretched thinner than ever before, but also you don't have to go see bands live that you like. The show will be up likely in HD quality, if not 4K, with quality audio in a day on YouTube. And wrestling is no different. I talked to Dragon Gate. Jay does the English commentary for Dragon Gate in Japan, and he was saying that he has friends that are DDT fans, and the DDT service is so easy to use that they have stopped going to shows. Why would they bother getting on a crowded train, going to Tokyo, being out late, doing this, doing that, when they could stay home and watch DDT Universe? There has never been it has never been harder in history to sell tickets to anything. So to compare, you know, Shima's drawing record to Hashimoto's drawing record is to me nonsensical.
I definitely think that there's just two different things of looking at it. And you look at Dragon Gate, as I said earlier, I think the fan base is different, but also the way it's covered in Japan is kind of a negative. And it's something that's nobody's fault. It's just in Japan, they're always going to look at the three traditional companies as the three traditional ones. And they'll always have that leg up on your Dragon Gate or DDT. Even if you have more fans, if you sell more, they see that as a different audience and how they cover it. I've talked to people from Japan a bunch of times. And I think do you think that kind of has an influence on maybe Dragon Gate not getting the same respect as a New Japan or even an All Japan that's a smaller company, but they all are always looked at as that traditional big company?
Completely. No, I mean, unfair is not the right word, but it is objectively true that Dragon Gate is covered differently both in America and in Japan than any of the legacy promotions. And we see that with the Tokyo Sports Awards every year. I mean, there is a situation where they did not award a 2021 Rookie of the Year in the Tokyo Sports Awards because logically it would have gone to a Dragon Gate wrestler, and the prevailing theory is that they did not want a Dragon Gate wrestler to win that 2 years in a row. They are always relegated to the Fighting Spirit Technique Award, and that is sort of the Dragon Gate MVP of the year. That's typically how it goes. I mean, they get magazine coverage, yes, but you know, just to your point earlier, the fan base is entirely different. You know, there's a Dragon Gate NOAH collab show coming up, and I know the Dragon Gate fans do not care about it. And unfortunately, the NOAH fans don't care about Dragon Gate. So it's just sort of this vanity exercise for the wrestlers that want to see these two promotions have some sort of relationship, but both fan bases have sort of rejected it.
Oh, yeah. I said that at the start. I always wonder why NOAH is, you know, in particular, it seems like they're going to all these different promotions that the fan base just doesn't resonate with them at all. And I think we saw that earlier this year when they put Eita in the main event versus Hayata in the Sumo Hall show, and it totally bombed. It's like the fans aren't going to buy into this. There's no connection with them like that. I actually always thought that if Dragon Gate and DDT could work together, I think that they would have more of fans being open-minded towards that because, again, they're outside of that traditional big company bubble. I think that the fans would kind of get with them if they did that more than NOAH.
The two DDT Dragon Gate collaboration shows, there was one in 2008 and one in 2012, both of those were very fun. The obstacle, from my understanding of it, for the Dragon Gate fans in Japan is that there was such a high working standard in Dragon Gate. You know, they are machines. They do not make mistakes. And the reputation that DDT has among at least a handful of Dragon Gate fans that I've spoken to is DDT is where wrestlers go when they aren't good enough to wrestle anywhere else. So although there are great wrestlers in DDT, obviously Takeshita, Higuchi, I'm a big Yukio Sakaguchi fan, the reputation hangs over this promotion of they're the scraps of either the Dragon Gate Dojo or guys that failed to make it elsewhere.
Yeah, that's a good, interesting case in terms of the reputation. Sometimes perception can be reality, even if it's not necessarily true, because I like a lot of the DDT guys. They have some amazing wrestlers there. But like you said, that's a very realistic reputation that you just said. That totally falls in line with what I know of the fans of Japan as well. So, you know, Shima, you think he's the best candidate on the ballot. I think that overall, like I said, I think in-ring, you would have to, if you're fair about it, you have to say he at least has a case. Drawing-wise, you know, are you going to look at the traditional style or the more open and more modern style? I think that will kind of hinge on his case in terms of box office. And influence is very interesting. So at the end of the day, it just kind of seems like when I wrote him down, when I studied all of them, I said, I feel like, yes, I could be swayed either way. And I think you swayed me even more. And I was leading yes anyway, but I think you swayed me. And remember that he still should be in the Carney Hall of Fame as well.
Oh, 100%, no argument there.
Yeah. So that's a good thing with Shima. I'm going to move on to the next candidates now. This one should be pretty interesting and perhaps brief when we look at him. Riki Choshu and Anemo Hamaguchi, part of Ishin Gundan. Hamaguchi was one of 12 others to join Choshu as part of Japan Pro Wrestling, and this was a part of the deal where Choshu jumped from New Japan to All Japan. They kind of formed a promotion, quote-unquote, but it was kind of like a kayfabe deal. They really just went to All Japan, but more or less. Here's my problem with this candidacy that I really don't understand. Maybe you have a greater insight. Maybe you have some kind of secret people inside, secret info you could give. I really don't understand why, if you're going to do this, Because, listen, Ricky Choshu, his influence level is like top 10 all time anywhere for what he did for Japanese pro wrestling. Totally changed the in-ring style when he jumped over and opened things up to a more high-paced style. He's amazing, and he totally deserves that on his own. It feels like this year, too, especially in Japan for some reason, we're seeing people that were like, I felt like, hey, so-and-so couldn't get on the ballot as a single, so we're going to put on this new tag team with a guy that's already in the Hall of Fame to be in there. And I feel like that's the case here. But I just wonder why it wasn't Choshu and Yatsu, who to me are much more well-regarded as a team in the Ishin Gundan faction, going in there. I mean, like, Hamaguchi's cool and all, and as a trainer, I think he has a way better case than as this tag team. But what do you make of this? Because I'm just going to be honest with you. When I see this team, I don't see it at all.
I was going to ask you the same question in regards to Choshu and Yatsu, because for as big of a Dragon Gate guy as I am, when I am sitting at home looking for footage to watch, I love 80s All Japan, and I specifically love the Choshu era of this promotion because of the way that Choshu changed things. Now, I am out on all of the new tag teams. I don't think I like the idea this year, with Japan being as loaded as it is and Dave limiting the votes per category to 5, I have made the decision that I am not voting for any of the new tag teams this year, of the guy that's already in with the guy that's not already in. But if it was Choshu and Yatsu, I would be really interested in exploring that. Choshu and Hamaguchi, I have no interest in. I will not be voting for them.
Yeah, it's a really bizarre deal. Like, at the end of the day, it feels like, because we know that a lot of people, you know, Dave is very open-minded to listen to cases for people to put in the Hall of Fame. Like you said, that is a new rule we should speak about. In each category, you're limited to 5, so you can't just say, yeah, vote them all in. Like, you know, that's not really allowed. I think it was actually a pretty decent rule change, actually. You know, I kind of like the idea on paper of limiting things. Even more so to kind of keep things more straightforward, and it makes you kind of limit your votes to where you're not going to go crazy on certain things. But so I like it on paper, but it definitely kind of makes it a little bit more difficult now, you know, so to speak, to where you have to make those cases to where it's like, hey, I like so-and-so, but I also need to vote these other guys in on this other, you know, on the modern U.S. ballot or the Lucha ballot, the Mexico candidates. So that kind of changes it. And to me, I just don't see any case for Hamaguchi or Choshu at all. I would really love to know the explanation from Dave himself for why it wasn't Yatsu, because I, like you said, I think that would be a really interesting team to look at. I think they're a really great work rate team, and he was the one that was the main partner of Choshu at the time in All Japan, so just a very strange candidacy. And we've seen, I wonder too, because we had mentioned we're going to get to the U.S. ballots, Vixen's fan on Twitter said that Dave claimed that the Von Erichs were supposed to be the historical candidacy instead of the modern one. So I wonder if there wasn't some kind of maybe flub a little bit to get Hamaguchi in there.
Yeah, it's Dave, so I never know. I respect the hell out of him, but he is the most unorganized man on the planet. And yeah, the Hamaguchi thing is baffling. But next year, if it's changed to Choshu and Yatsu, that is a team that I will sit down and spend a lot of time looking at, because I, on paper, at least my gut instinct is, yes, that is a Hall of Fame tag team, but Choshu and Hamaguchi, no way.
Yeah, it's a very, very strange situation there, we have to say. And Choshu's partner when they were the tag champions in All Japan was Yatsu, yeah. Not Hamaguchi. So it's, I have no real thing behind this. But moving on, we're going to move to a team that another one that might be a little quicker here. Tenkozy. Satoshi Kojima and Hiroshi Tenzan, they've been on the ballot for a while now, and it's interesting because a lot of their saving grace appears to be the Japanese voters, like the native voters. It seems like they're always ranking a little bit higher there than the Western voters, so to speak, here. And now here's what I wrote in my notes when I was studying them. I said, I'm convinced that Choshu and Hamaguchi were put on to make them look better. But that was the real reason. I think, are you buying this conspiracy?
I think you might be onto something there, because I am of the belief, and I know there are other people that think this way as well, that I think Kojima as a singles candidate is really interesting, and although I'm not sure I would vote for him, he is somebody that I would like to do a lot of research on, but as a tag team, no, this is a one look, and I know that I'm good.
Yeah, as a tag team, it makes no sense. I think even Tenzan had a huge level of popularity in the mid-2000s when he won the G1, won the title. He was clamored for by the fans. Obviously, he didn't have a sustained run, and then injuries really took him down in ring-wise. But yeah, Kojima, especially as a singles, because you have to consider that somebody like a Yuji Nagata's in, and Kojima was almost clearly a bigger star by the end, even though a lot of stuff wasn't Nagata's fault. We talked about the Crow Cop fight that really hurt Nagata's credibility. That wasn't really his fault. But at the end of the day, you look at Kojima, and he had that, you know, amazing run where he was the person to hold the Triple Crown and the IWGP title at the same time, which he did win from Tenzan, in fact, in an infamous match that went 10 seconds before the 60-minute time limit draw and led to Tanahashi and Nakamura going crazy.
and if anything, Kojima should be rewarded for getting out. You know, Nagata was stuck in this hellhole, and Kojima got out, and I really think the All Japan portion of his career, on top of it's like he is this guy that keeps these promotions afloat, whether it's All Japan of the early 2000s or Noah in 2015. I guess a little bit earlier than that is when he was there. It's one of those things that I would like to look at. I don't think I would vote for him. I'm pretty sure I wouldn't vote for Tenzan, but I would certainly hear somebody out. But as a tag team, no shot.
Yeah, I think Tenzan's underrated historically, but I definitely Kojima had the big run. They do have a lot of titles, I guess, if you want to look at it, because they are 6-time IWGP Tag Team Champions. NWA, when the NWA was around, they won the tag titles there. They won the Real World Tag League in All Japan 2006-2008. That's when so here's the good thing about them that you can point to is that there was the thing is, as singles, that's a different case, as we said. As a team, there's just really very little evidence that they have any kind of drawing case, like box office case, at a Hall of Fame level. The closest would be because their reformation as an intra-promotional team in 2006, that got a lot of interest. You know, that made a lot of waves. Match quality, to me, not a Hall of Fame level. Their highest match was against each other, that aforementioned IWGP and All Japan, or Triple Crown the title match from February 2005. Their highest match as a tag team on Cage Match was the match I would point to as well, was the G1 Tag League Final of 2001 against Jim Steele and Mike Barton. An amazing match against people you would never expect it from.
Shockingly good. It makes no sense that match is as good as it is.
Yeah, and it shows you how great Tenkozy were, again, but they just didn't have a lot of opportunities. No influence, really, as a team either, I feel like. But it's not, they're like a cool team, but not Hall of Famers, is kind of how I like them. It's nice that we have such a long-term team that they've been together for all these years, but they're cool, but that's not a Hall of Famer. In my book, you know, at the end of the day. So, yeah, very, very strange thing there. But they've been around for a while. They've lasted. They didn't get they haven't fall off the ballot. If you fall off, basically, to get in, you need 60% of the votes at least. And if you fall off, it's because you have less than 10%. And they've held on. And other guys, like Takashi Sugira last year, who I love a lot, is like one of my favorites. He fell off. So they've lasted throughout it. So they will last again, perhaps, and we will have a similar conversation next year saying, why are they not singles? next candidate is someone I definitely have a lot to say on here, Yoshiaki Fujiwara here. What's your take on Fujiwara here? Because he's a guy that I think there's a wide divergence of opinions on, depending on who you are. So I'd love to hear your take on him.
So this take gets me into trouble every year. There's always Twitter users like Anoki's chin or Fujita's thigh or, you know, whatever deep puro nerd there is that is trying to convince everybody that Heat Up is actually the best promotion in the world. That gets very mad at me for this. I am under no belief that Yoshiaki Fujiwara is a Wrestling Observer Newsletter Hall of Famer. I like Fujiwara, and I think that is where there's oftentimes a disconnect. I think he is a phenomenal wrestler. I love him in New Japan. I tolerate his shoot style work, but I just do not see it with him. And I would love to know your thoughts, because I get the feeling you're on the different side of the fence.
That's right. Those were poetic words you said there. Why are these people catching strays? But more or less with Fujiwara. So here is my arguments for him, and we can kind of see what you say. So first of all, we have to say it. He could possibly be, besides the Choshu and Hamaguchi tag team, he could possibly be the least heralded worker to be put on the ballot in terms of accomplishments. there's no major titles or tournament wins in his category. He was never the main guy or you know, the top star or anything like that. He was a largely respected figure with name value to both the fans and other wrestlers alike that was able to shine, even in background roles, and still have star power. The fact remains about his lack of titles, that's an easy hook for the detractors. He was never the top guy or a world champion or anything like that. To me, I think you have to look at his match quality, first of all. So many different roles. Even in those New Japan multi-man tags in the 80s, he was able to stand out in big matches. He had big matches against people like Riki Choshu and Inoki, which were both not only awesome matches, but also successful as draws when he was put there. He has a huge presence in UWF and all of its various offshoots, not just his own company, by the way, but in the UWFs up until the end of newborn UWF, UWF 2 in 1990, him versus Takada sold out Osaka Joe Hall in the main event and had an amazing match, in my opinion. He did a lot of good business in UWF and UWF 2. He always felt like a major player, even into the 90s now. So I was looking this up. He was main eventing Sumo Hall shows and selling them out in 93 for New Japan. This is like a decade, when you think about it, of 94 to 1993, of having high respect, name value, in addition to a lot of excellent matches. And even in 2001 now, all the way after the first Champion Carnival, the post-split, you know, with All Japan and Noah, the very first Champion Carnival show, Fujiwara well past his prime, but when it came to the first show of the Champion Carnival that year, All Japan turned to him to set the tone in the main event versus Kawada and sold out. And I think the main thing about him as well, his training credentials are so huge in that he's responsible for almost the entirety of the original Battle Arts class, who all turned out to be tremendous wrestlers in their own right, and he trained people who became name value players for decades to come, like your Masakatsu Funakis, your Minoru Suzukis. He trained his own rivals later on in Tiger Mask, you know, Satoru Sayama and Akira Maeda. He trained Shinobu Kandori, one of the best Joshi wrestlers ever. His influence was super great, although, ultimately, I think the thing against him is going to be, well, shoot style died out, which is true, but I think that's an injustice to not acknowledge what he was for decades beforehand with that. So to me, he's amazingly charismatic with the facial expressions, which were so strong. It is, he sold in a realistic sense that I think literally every wrestler possible can learn something from if they watch his matches. I think he has so much to him in terms of a draw. Obviously, his match quality is not going to be for everybody if you're not a fan of the shoot style, but I think if you look at his, the people he's trained, the influence he had in that realm for decades, and his drawing power when he was put on top, I think that there's a lot there to him that I think gets underrated a little bit.
I really respect that output, and I especially think the list of wrestlers that he's trained is incredibly impressive, but I also think it comes with the caveat that in the same way that I list off a bunch of guys that Shima has influence on, and we're now seeing those guys be a vibrant part of the current wrestling scene, I am so hung up on the idea that Fujiwara basically fathered a dead style of wrestling, and that Minoru Suzuki, although he takes a lot from Fujiwara, he also had to adapt his style to become a success. And anything post UWF 2, I don't really take Funaki seriously as a draw. And I don't even really take Fujiwara seriously as a draw. That's sort of my big hang-up. If he had the influence of the men that he trained and the women that he trained with, I think, a stronger drawing pedigree, I would buy it. But he's second fiddle to Maeda in the first UWF. He's a second-tier guy, which is no disrespect, but he's a second-tier guy in 80s New Japan when he returns. He's underneath Funaki and Maeda and Takada, and really, to a degree, Shamrock in UWF 2. And then anything after that, we're talking about, you know, his own promotion, which was a commercial flop. And I weirdly think that Kawada match that you mentioned, that might be his single most impressive a drawing candidacy right there. There's the most impressive thing on his drawing resume, because that popped a decent little house. But yeah, I'm just not there with Fujiwara. I think in the same way that I might think Shima is great at everything, I think Fujiwara is good at everything, and nothing is strong enough to get him over the hump.
Yeah, and I understand that, but I feel like the dead style thing is, I know that's a very popular opinion, but the thing is, we don't really know what the future is going to hold in wrestling, right? So let's say in 15 years, the style has completely changed in wrestling, and there's no more high-flying wrestling. It's all died out for whatever reason. Would that negate the influence that your Shimas and your Marufujis that we're going to talk about? Would that just totally erase that and say it doesn't count anymore because it died out?
Do you think shoot style has ever been as prevalent as the current junior heavyweight style is in wrestling right now?
I mean, in terms of drawing power, they had huge shows.
Absolutely. I think that's fair. I think that's fair, but it was also short-lived.
Yeah, you know, the original UWF was around 84, and rings died out 90. Well, it didn't die out, but it went full MMA in 99. So that's a 15-year gap, I would say. And, you know, you talk about Shima, that match at Ring of Honor was 2006, if you want to lead that in, and Marufuji as well was around that same era, which is just over 15 years as well. So I think that maybe the junior style is more prevalent, but I don't think it's like, it's way different, and the shoot style was just, it was like this blip on the radar. I think they had a healthy run. 15 years is a long time, in my opinion, in wrestling.
I see that argument. I'm not entirely there on shoot style being as vibrant as it was for that 15-year stretch, but I think that's a fair point. And by the way, if 10 years from now, if Dynamite is headlined by a bunch of work shoots, matches, not promos, I should clarify, because I'd be more than happy to at least reevaluate Fujiwara, and if he's off the ballot, say, Dave, you know, we need to put this guy back home. We need to see if wrestling in 2030 is mirroring what Fujiwara did in 1984. I would love to have that conversation, but we're living in 2022, and I don't see the threads of what Fujiwara was doing, you know, 30 years ago. I don't see it in modern wrestling right now. Whereas, again, I see it from, you know, the first Toriyama show onwards. That's a 23-year gap where I see the continued influence. I respect Fujiwara. I really do. Yeah. I'm not there with him in any of the categories that really sway me to put him over the top.
Yeah, and that's true. I mean, but, you know, I think my argument would be like if we backed it up 20 years, you could see those threads more. It's just it was so long ago. We're talking about a guy who's 73 years old. So it's very hard. This is kind of what I said earlier. It's hard to compare somebody like him to these newer guys when the eras were just so different. I mean, he started in the 70s, you know, like almost 50 years ago. So I think that's kind of my argument for that, because this is like – I'm not sitting here saying no, shoot style is now going to revive and we just don't know is all I'm saying. And that's kind of my problem with a lot of these younger guys we're getting to. That's one of my problems with the Hall of Fame, is we don't know what's going to happen with a lot of these younger guys. And I think that it's hard to gauge them fairly. But I made my push for it. Hopefully they did. And like I said, I think the stuff in the New Japan when they brought him in the 90s is still very impressive as well, going in there. And to be fair, the UWF and New Japan feud was one of the highest, you know, in terms of drawing power and stuff. That was one of the highest points of the entire company was when they did.
Yes, and I love that stuff, but I can't point at Fujiwara and say he's the reason that happened.
No. If anything, Takada was the one that would you would look at. But regardless of all that, that's Fujiwara. I enjoyed the discussion, and hopefully I made some good points. Hopefully, if anyone other voters are listening, they listen to me and not him. I definitely think Fujiwara, to me, he's like a legend and a slam dunk candidate by those standards. But what you said is true too, that his stuff is not like, obviously there's much more of a thread you can point towards a Shima than him in terms of modern wrestling. So, speaking of guys who are influential, I think we can all agree that this next candidate fits that box. Hayabusa. He's another guy that has been on the ballot for a few years now. It's going to be interesting to see how things go with him. What's your feelings on him as a voter here? What's your feelings on Hayabusa?
So I'm going to ask you a question, before that. If you don't mind me asking, how old are you?
I'm 30 years old.
Okay. All right. So I'm 23, and I think the argument with Hayabusa, and I don't know the exact cutoff, but I think if you're Gen Z, you're not sold on Hayabusa. Now, I would also make the argument, not a lot of Gen Zers thinking about Hayabusa, period. But at least for me, it's funny that you have the influence argument, because if this is perception is reality, it's not fair to Hayabusa, but I just – he doesn't strike me as being an incredible influence on current wrestling. I think he had his day where he was incredibly influential. I'm not sure I see it right now. He's also, more than anybody else in any of the categories that I'm voting for, he is the one that I would like to learn more on. So apologies if I do sound ignorant towards the legacy of Hayabusa. That's certainly not my intent. I'm really interested in digging into his drawing record because he does have a few huge houses to his name. I'm not really interested in his in-ring work. I don't think that's going to sway me one way or another. But if you have a huge argument for Hayabusa being influential, I would love to hear it. Because it's not that I disagree. He just never comes across my radar as a super influential guy.
Yeah, so with Hayabusa, you know, just to kind of build up there, to me, the big knock against him is that he does have some big houses and was a legendary performer in his time. But FMW did take a tumble when Onita left, you know, and he was the guy. He was never able to get the torch passed due to Onita's selfishness and everything about that. But he never really was effectively able to keep the ball rolling to where Onita had it. But he did keep, and here's the thing, this is another thing where you can look at it in terms of drawing power. He was the reason they were able to keep it afloat for so long, and when his injury hit, that was the end of the line for the company. So, like, I think that that does count for something when you see some people that will, you know, go to that. I personally don't see him as a Hall of Fame box office draw just because things did go down with him on top. But he was a big star of his time and, like I said, kept the company afloat in what could have been a terrible time. I'm sure we're going to have that same argument with another person that we'll talk about later. In-ring, you know, like you said, that's not really going to sell you. He actually kind of reminds me, like, a lot of ways it's like a shoot-style candidate. Not that his wrestling style was shoot-style at all, it was obviously way different, but I think you have to be in the right mindset to really enjoy him fully and appreciate him completely, because there are a lot of things you can point to if you're a detractor. Just the same way with shoot-style, which I love so much, but obviously there's things you can point to. You know, you could say he was too sloppy, and there are elements of that, surely. But I think he was good in that that became a part of his identity as a wrestler, and that he had a ton of heart and would willingly sacrifice himself or take risks because he knew how to wrestle and win for the fans. Or that was how he would wrestle and win for the fans. Charisma incredibly high, both under the mask and as his unmasked gimmick H, the male model type of deal he had. I thought he did a great job. I wouldn't put him on my list of greatest ever as a purely as a worker. But that is something you can point to. His influence, his injury obviously cut his career short and was a tragic thing. But you look at wrestlers all over the place. Someone like Sabu was directly influenced by Hayabusa, like unquestionably and in almost every way. And he was influenced by Sabu. And you see someone like, look at Bandido right now. This man is almost exactly like Hayabusa, looks-wise and how he works. And that's why you see, if you look at a lot of the ballots, the actual, the current wrestlers, he always ranks super high with a lot of the wrestlers, the active wrestlers in votes. So I think that that tells you that a lot of the actual wrestlers themselves really look up and respect Hayabusa. I do think a part of that is because of his tragic injury, that everybody knows that. I think a lot of people have seen the video of him getting up out of the wheelchair and how inspirational it was. I think that that was a big case for him. The way he kept moving forward in life and was still able to be around in wrestling, that moved the fans and wrestlers alike even more than his work in the ring. His legacy and legend and influence, to me, he has a legendary status that a lot of the new guys just don't have, and it's one of those things that can't be really put into words. It's just, he feels like a legend to me more than these modern guys that are on the candidacy. And maybe that's not fair or anything you could quantify per se, but he feels like a legend to me in a way. And I didn't live through his run either. I was still a kid, like a very small child when he got injured. But I knew about him before almost any Japanese wrestler automatically around maybe 12, 13 years ago. And obviously now, and he's passed away since. And I think that I don't think he'll be able to get in. In the vote, but I do think that he's a legend and very influential to the modern age, just in terms of his wrestling style, his reckless style. That really came along and helped, you know, you could point to other people as well, though. It wasn't just him that influenced the style. I think his influence is like the aura that he has as a character, as a wrestler, and what he meant, and as just a human being afterwards.
I think that's a really good way of putting it. I think he's a legend. I don't necessarily think he's a Hall of Famer, but he is somebody that I will be exploring, if not this year, then certainly the next time around, assuming he doesn't either fall off or get in, because he's a wrestler that intrigues me, but he's unfortunately on a ballot with people that I think are slam dunk Hall of Famers, and he is just not that to me at this point in time.
And it's clear that hasn't played off with the voters themselves, because he's never gotten in, although he has ranked highly in the past as well, so you have to think that. Yeah, Hayabusa, to me, very interesting candidate. So somebody that definitely deserves a look. It's going to be interesting seeing where he plays out. But Guy, also Hayabusa, one of the best entrance theme songs, and he did influence BB Hulk as well as his trainer. So we have to give him
and hugely influential on Dragon Kid as well.
Yeah. So you know, I think he's definitely influential to the wrestlers. But maybe you're right. The younger generation, I think that's why that was kind of my argument for Fujiwara as well. That eventually, no matter what happens, I think influence will die out, no matter who you are, unless you're like a top Inoki level star, where everybody knows you forever. I think for a lot of people that influence is not going to last, no matter who it is. There's going to be a time where nobody knows Kota Ibushi. Like, coming up is who we're going to talk about next, the next candidate. I took a lot of notes on him, and an interesting thing with him, 34 matches ranked, at least nine on Cage Match, going in there. So he's got a lot of legacy and high votes, and he touched a lot of people with his work and think that he's great. He's won a lot of awards, best flying wrestler all the time from 2009 to 2013, and he still stuck around for a few years after that. He's had match of the year ratings. He's been in the top 10 for a lot of most outstanding. He peaked at number 2 in 2020. He won the world title. What do you think of him as a candidate? Because I think he's a really interesting guy to look at.
So I don't want to throw off the order of your show, but I'm going to lump in Ibushi, Ishii, and Naito all together. Then I'll expand on Ibushi.
And these three guys in particular, what I just said about Hayabusa feeling like a legend more than the other guys, it's like all of these New Japan guys. To me, it's hard. And this is why I think, and I'm just going to go on a tangent that doesn't have anything to do with anything, but I wish that the voting age was raised. Because I think it's not very fair to compare a Hayabusa who's been dead for years and hasn't wrestled in 20 years to a guy who's still active and adding to his case in a lot of these cases. And who knows what's going to happen with Ibushi with all of his controversy right now. But these guys are still active wrestlers and still can do a lot when you look at it. I think it's not a fair comparison, in my opinion. I wish that we had raised the age a little bit. That's just my opinion.
I think there's validity to that, but I think – we are at a moment in time where with Ibushi, Ishii, and Naito, we are past the zenith of New Japan Pro Wrestling in the Bushiroad era. We've passed their peak. And if they peak again, more power to them. It only adds to the legacy that these guys have. But I think from February 12th of 2012 through January 5th of 2020, that is a specific era, and that is an era that is over. So while, you know, Naito and Ishii are active wrestlers, and Ibushi, who knows what happens with him, while they still have more to their story, I think it's really important that we now recognize that 8-year run that New Japan had as one of the most creative, one of the most successful from an in-ring standpoint, and one of the most successful from a business standpoint, one of the most successful runs in the history of pro wrestling. It was magical. It was phenomenal. I feel bad for people that might have discovered New Japan through the Forbidden Door pay-per-view, and they will never know what it was like watching 2014, 2015, 2016 New Japan in the moment, because I doubt for as long as I live that I will ever experience something quite like that ever again. And it is important to me that we recognize that that era is over, and that these guys might add on to their candidacy in the future, but they have done enough. If they retired tomorrow, they are Hall of Famers to me. I can go a little more in depth on Naito and Ishii in a minute. As for Ibushi, this is going to be a very odd statement. I'm not saying Kota Ibushi is the greatest wrestler of all time, but when I watch him at his peak, when I watch his best matches, I'm not sure I've ever seen anybody more talented. You add that onto his drawing resume, which is phenomenal. I don't know if there's a ton of influence there. I mean, maybe just him being the figurehead of DDT for as long as he was, and DDT growing. I could weirdly buy some sort of influence case there, but I'm not really married to it. But his in-ring work and his business work, these New Japan guys deserve a place in this Hall of Fame, and Kota Ibushi more so than anybody.
Yeah, you know, I think that Ibushi, to me, if you're going to say influence, I think that would be more accurately given to the DG guys, you know, the Toriyama guys of his style. And even the comedy DDT stuff, if you want to point to that, I think was developed before him and more popularized, quote unquote, through his partner, Kenny Omega at the time, which could be a positive for Ibushi if you hate comedy wrestling as well. When it's all said and done, I mean, his antics outside of the ring, that could be a negative influence. Like, you know, again, we just don't know what's going to happen with that. Even those that were originally on his side don't associate with him or have his back anymore. I think that's a thing you can look at. Draw-wise, the thing is, he meant a lot to DDT on an indie level. And in general, everywhere he went, he was pretty much a name player everywhere since at least 2007. And I think that has to count for something. I do think what really hurts him is the biggest push of his career was an unquestionable flop and a disaster, more or less, with the whole, you know, combining the titles, the fans turned on him, things didn't work out, and even he wasn't happy with it. It's like, it was a really bad thing, and the last couple of years have led down. I think in-ring-wise, just me as a fan, I think Ibushi's a great wrestler. I think he's got a strong argument. He has a ton of big-time matches, ones that left a legacy. To me, that final with Tanahashi is one of the absolute best G1 finals that you've ever seen.
That Tanahashi match is so insane, and he's got the Nakamura match from 2013, which I think really that whole show, that Osaka G1 show was, at least for me, as somebody that was getting into Japanese wrestling at the time, that was like an, oh shit, I need to pay attention to New Japan type show. And then him and Nakamura at Wrestle Kingdom 9 with the English commentary on that show, that is a match that changed the trajectory of New Japan in America. It just did. New Japan does not have the Western expansion success that they have without Ibushi and without some of his top level matches.
And I think that, you know, great point. First of all, I love that Wrestle Kingdom Nakamura match. I think that's one of the best Wrestle Kingdom matches, honestly, to me. And he's a guy, another thing that I really like about him, because we talked about guys, you know, like with me and Fujiwara, not everyone's going to like him. There's going to be some people that say, no, the Dragon Gate style sucks. But with Ibushi, he seems like he's kind of overcome any kind of bias. Even if you're not a fan of the traditional, because there's guys in New Japan that think that Tanahashi isn't that great, or Okada, you know, fans. But if you're not a fan of traditional New Japan style, or even before that, traditional DDT style, he always seemed to rise above it to the fans that if they were willing to at least watch him, he always has a certain something about him that is eye-catching, and he has appeal to a wide, wide range of fans. It feels like pretty much anybody can pretty much admit that Ibushi's a really strong in-ring performer.
Oh, if you're not into Ibushi's in-ring work, I would say find a new hobby. I don't understand how he does everything. I don't understand how he couldn't be for you.
Yeah, and he has a little bit of everything. He had the high flying. He has the striking ability that he would have. He has a kickboxing background, shoot boxing background. He's a guy that has just had a great career in terms of in-ring. Again, he's one of these guys where it's like, he doesn't feel like a legend, but his in-ring work has the longevity to claim to it. And the drawing power, you could go either way. I think if he ever went to AEW regularly, he would make a big difference to their fans and get that kind of support to get over the hump. But I think with everything that's happened the last couple of years, I don't think he'll be able to get in this year, personally.
It'll be interesting. I do think you're right. I think he'll take a bit of a hit, and I don't really think that's warranted. But again, I'm looking at these New Japan guys as if their career was over, that they've done enough at this point in time to where I don't really care what comes after.
And then there's Ishii, and Ishii to me is like the one that is the most controversial somehow person on the ballot, because it's like, he came on this year, and he's been on like the past couple of years, but every year he comes on and everyone's like, wait a minute, Ishii? How could he be in the Hall of Fame? He's not a Hall of Famer. But in the reality of it, he has the most cage match, the highest number of 9 or higher matches, 36 of anybody. And he has some of the greatest matches of all time, in my opinion. The thing is, he's never been pushed at any kind of level. And I think people will automatically not necessarily follow the trajectory of the Meltzer standard of the Hall of Fame, where it distinctly says, even if it's just one of the three categories, if you're at that top tier level, you could get in, like, on a purely in-ring work. But that's something that's not, I don't think has ever really happened. We could say where, well, this guy got in purely on in-ring work. And I think that's why a lot of people are dismissing Ishii, even though if you look at his in-ring, he has such a wide net of amazing matches and total longevity throughout his career as well that I think gets overlooked, even if you just take away all of the early stuff, because he was doing good stuff as an indie heel guy as well. He never got the opportunity to have like emotional matches or big matches that he would be later on, but he had some really good matches then. And then when he finally got pushed, it's like he's been the G1 MVP for so many years running overall and had so many great matches. And I think, honestly, I think he's underrated. I think he clearly influenced a certain subsection of wrestlers since his rise in 2013. And I think if you say to any New Japan fan who wrestles the most strong style, he's who comes to mind. Unfortunately, a lot of these newer guys, they kind of miss out on a lot of why he's so great, to be honest, to do his style worse than him. But the influence is real. I think that he's an underrated influence candidate, in my opinion. What do you think about that?
It's interesting because I really don't look at Ishii's influence, but I think he's an underrated candidate from a drawing perspective. You know, Joe Lanza did some great research and noted that Ishii's headlined over 30 New Japan shows in singles main events. And those are smaller G1 shows. They're never open weight title matches on smaller shows, Rev Pro and New Japan US stuff. But while he's never been that top guy, it's also important to know that I think sometimes when we look at things through the context of the Observer Hall of Fame and we look at Ishii, oh, no, he wasn't a draw. Like, he's just been working 8-man undercard tags his entire career. But that's not true, you know?
Yeah, that's not true, yeah.
He wasn't Ibushi, he wasn't Naito, he wasn't Tanahashi, he wasn't Okada. But to think that this guy didn't add something to the box office during this historically great run is patently false. So he would get in for me on in-ring work alone, I think. To kind of reiterate that point about that era of New Japan being such a special time, Ishii's matches were something so entirely unique. I think they need to be immortalized in this Hall of Fame, and then he has the drawing record on top of that. So, yeah, Ishii's a vote for me.
And I think you could also credit him. I think he deserves some credit for making the G1 seem like a must-see buy in the pre-New Japan World days, back when they were on Ustream. His matches were getting so much hype and buzz that I really feel like he was one of the top draws of that, as much as a Tanahashi or Okada doesn't get the kind of love there. And you also have to say he has to be considered one of modern New Japan's most well-traveled performers. He's always in demand in America and outside of New Japan and England. He's had a number of Rev Pro shows. It seems like he's always the guy the foreign companies turn to when they need a New Japan guy. And New Japan's obviously always happier to give him than maybe an Okada or a Tanahashi. But he's always there and doing things. You mentioned that he had one title shot versus Naito, and that did a surprisingly high number. And I've always said that he just never got chances to be that top guy. It's not that he couldn't do it. I always felt like he could, but, obviously I think people are going to point to that and say, oh, he was never the world champion like Naito was or anything like that, and it's unfortunate. And I think, you know, even in his own company, look at, look at what that never title meant when he had it to where it is now. You know.
Yeah, 100%. I'm glad you mentioned that thing about him being really important to the American expansion, because I think that's true. I mean, when Ishii came over, so I think the first time he did a Ring of Honor show was their 14th anniversary show, which was Vegas, February of 2016. I hate that I know that off the top of my head, but I do. And that was a really big deal. And then his second date was Chicago Global Wars 2016, and Ishii being on those shows was seen as like, yes, Okada's there, yes, Tanahashi's there, but like, oh my god, Ishii's wrestling in America. That's a huge deal, and that's a small component of his resume, but I think it's something worth mentioning.
Yeah, and you know, look at here's an example I would use in terms of influence, even in his own company. Compare Shibata for the first, when he first came back, and obviously his first run originally, that wrestler Shibata and Laughter 7 Shibata, who was around there the first time, compare that to after he started wrestling Ishii. Shibata's style completely changed to much more of a never Ishii style. Goto, the same way. He was a much different style of wrestler after that never period came about. You could see Ishii's fingerprints on those guys. Their styles were much different before they started wrestling him and in that never style. So to me, I think his influence is kind of underrated, in my opinion.
Yeah, I had not thought about it like that, but I think you're right.
Yeah, so I think he's an underrated candidate for sure. Like, to me, he's like, the thing is, he doesn't feel like a legend, per se, But by the criteria, to me, he's a pretty strong candidate, in my opinion. I think that he's got a really good case. It'll be interesting to see how he plays out. But like I said, I've seen a lot of negative reaction to him. I think he's an underrated candidate. Naito, the last of these New Japan guys that we all kind of lumped in. What do you think about him? I think he's the biggest, star in the Western version as well. And even definitely in Japan, actually, he's the biggest star. But what do you make of him?
Naito bores me to death. I don't think Naito has ever had a great match because of Naito. I think he has great matches because he's been paired with Okada and Ishii and Tanahashi and Ibushi and some of the greatest wrestlers to ever live. But he is one of the biggest stars of one of the biggest eras in any company. He is absolutely a Hall of Famer, even if I really am not a fan of him, nor do I have interest in him. I think it comes across in my voice, that even somebody like Fujiwara, who I'm not voting for, even somebody like Hayabusa, I care about. I think there's interest in discussing them. Naito, I really don't care about, but I will be voting for him because it would be an injustice if I didn't.
And that's true. I'm not his biggest fan by any stretch of the imagination. I don't think he's a Hall of Fame caliber in-ring performer. I'd put him below, honestly, a majority of these people on the Japanese ballot. He has a few great matches to hang your hat on. Again, you could say that maybe it was because of the other guys. I think his series versus Tanahashi is criminally underrated and better than a lot of feuds hailed as legendary in New Japan.
Let me be clear. I think he's had amazing matches. I mean, I think the Omega stuff is some of the best stuff I've ever seen. I am just, after every great Tetsuya Naito match, I'm not going, wow, Naito was great. I'm going, wow, Omega or Tanahashi or Ibushi, whoever it was, wow, they were really something special. And Naito was also there.
And I think that injuries have taken a lot out of him and has for quite a while. I think even now, when it's time for like the big level matches or against somebody that you know he really likes and respects, like your Tanahashis or that Shingo, he had a big match with him a few years ago, he usually comes through. But there are other times where he feels stuck in second gear for months on end. And I don't consider him the same caliber of an Ibushi or a Shingo or an Ishii when it comes to the wrestling-wise. Influence-wise, I think that, he lifted a lot of his act from Sombra and Rush in CMLL. So I think that's an interesting thing to look at there. Who do you credit to? Because he popularized it on a worldwide level for sure. I think that a big thing with him is that he helped guys in LIJ get way more over than they ever would be without him, and that directly goes to him. That includes people like Evil and Sonata, who to me are like bottom-of-the-barrel talents. Like, I hate watching their matches and have for many years. And somehow, through Naito making LIJ what it was, those guys got put into main event spots, which, of course, they failed miserably at and were quickly depushed. But that isn't Naito's fault. You had Shingo, a Dragon Gate wrestler who started as a junior, end up transcending and becoming the world champion. I think you have to consider LIJ having a big factor in that, his connection with Naito. Hiromu's probably where he is either way. He hasn't been a main event player or anything like that outside of brief moments. But there's no way LIJ and Naito didn't give him a helping hand. So I think his influence is strong on that level. I don't see him influencing like in-ring style on a greater cause. But I think that counts for something, though, that he helped a lot of guys that probably wouldn't be as big as they were without him. I think he's like a good point guard. I'm watching basketball right now as we record this. he is a Ja Morant level, except not as exciting. I think
not as exciting.
No. He's a charismatic guy. He's like a pass first point guard, I guess you could say. And he helps the other guys.
Yeah. Again, there's no argument that I can buy for anybody to not vote for him. He's just been too important to New Japan over the last 6 or 7 years. But I'm not a fan by any means. Yeah, he's not somebody that excites me.
Okay, I'm going to play devil's advocate briefly with him and make a little bit of an argument against him. Not that I'm saying it just for the point of conversations. It's worth noting that he was never trusted to be the top title holder for very long on his own by his own company. Because if you look at his accomplishments and title runs, it's a long list of stuff. But then you go into it. His three title reigns, none of his three major title reigns amassed more than one defense.
Dylan, you're going to get me in trouble. This is sort of my whole thing with him. If if I was maybe a little bit younger, I would take this stance and run with it as to why he's not a Hall of Famer. I don't have it in me anymore, but I think you're right. Look, he is a very nice 1B, and I think there is a reason that he has never been the top dog, nor should he have been. It was Okada's company. It was that way. It's going to stay that way. It should stay that way.
Well, see, here's the thing. That's true. And the six IC, even his six IC title reigns, only his first one had more than one defense, with multiple of those having zero defenses. So you have to wonder why that is, because to me, I don't necessarily agree that it should have been that way, because to me, he's the most popular wrestler in the company, and it has been, to the fans, merch sales, fan reaction, things like that. But when I researched his work, because when I came into this, I thought, oh yeah, Naito, of course, he's got the legacy, he's the Hall of Famer, he's the top star, and one of the most popular guys. I think when you really dig into it, it's not as slam dunk as I thought it was, but I still think you can't underestimate his popularity worldwide. And also, I think something, the passion he creates within that fan base is greater than anyone else on this entire ballot, other than perhaps CM Punk. I would say.
Yeah, it's terrifying. I've been against some Naito fans in the past. It's not a fun place to be in.
and they love Naito.
So more than anything, they love them some Tetsuya Naito.
And that speaks to him, even though it is scary, perhaps. but it says something about him that he was able to get that kind of interest and care for him. And he did, it's interesting to note that the highest number in the dome was actually Ibushi versus Okada from Wrestle Kingdom 14, night one. That did more than Naito's win, which came after. But the fan support, if you listen to the fans, it's like that was an amazing moment that changed people's lives. And like the fans really love Naito. And I think he has a lot of popularity, sells a ton of merch, is famous. He has the thing with the carp, the baseball team. He's got stuff all around. And I think he is a Hall of Famer ultimately. My only problem with him is, again, I wish that we could have waited a few years to see if his legacy can really withhold, because we think he will. There's good reason to believe it. I'm not even saying it's not. I just want to know for sure if somebody's legacy can last more than, like, because it's easy to say, oh, yeah, they're a Hall of Famer now. But we just don't know how their legacy is going to play out. And I think that that's an important part to being a Hall of Famer, in my opinion. But
I think that's fair.
Yeah, Naito, Ibushi, Ishii, regardless of what I think, it's not the Dillon Hall of Fame, but it is, they are there. The next candidate we'll kind of go through, now we've passed the New Japan guys a little bit, saving Shingo for last, obviously. Antonio Inoki and Seiji Sakaguchi. This is another one of those tag team deals where it feels like they're trying to get a guy onto the ballot by pairing him with an older star. I think that this vote is going to be very interesting because Inoki just passed away, obviously, and his star level is so high on its own. But them as a tag team, here's the thing. They were important in the early days of New Japan. They worked both in New Japan, and we're talking like 73, 74. They worked in California to get those relationships off the ground with NWA Hollywood. There's not a ton of them on tape to watch wrestle or anything like that. Again, I hate the idea that we're comparing these guys to Naito and Ibushi and like stuff that we can watch a billion matches on, and like these guys you can watch a dozen at best. My impression is that they were better in the 80s stage than the 70s as a team, honestly. And they were better off singles, and that obviously played out with Inoki becoming the star that he became. But that's off admittedly little footage. I can't really declare it, definitively. Their match with Gotch and Thez from 73, I think that Gotch and Thez were a far better team. But the big match they would point to was when the 85 Tag League Final, which saw Fujinami pin Inoki for the first time, which was an incredible match and a great moment for Fujinami as well. So to me, they're probably more influential backstage because Sakaguchi was a major role as Inoki's right-hand man in a lot of ways in New Japan. It's tough to judge them accurately, so I don't really want to say definitively. But to me, it's going to be interesting to see how the votes play out. I'll say that.
I absolutely think this team is going to get a death bump because of Inoki. What I think is going to happen is that they are going to do incredibly well. Shima's going to do incredibly poorly, and I'm going to be really angry for about a week, and it's going to be hard to explain to people in my life why I'm angry. I don't really want to get into that, but it's going to affect my mood. I'm out on all of these tag teams, and this is another one where I don't see it.
Case, I've got your back. I'm going to support you through these hard times if anything goes wrong with this.
When somebody says what's wrong, it's hard to say the Wrestling Observer Newsletter Hall of Fame. That doesn't compute with most humans.
I'm surprised by that.
I know. I don't like this world we live in either.
Maybe one day it's going to be that big. You can say that. You can say that you influenced it. You're a mover and a shaker.
That's exactly what I am, a mover and a shaker. Well put.
The next candidate I think we might have a little bit more to talk about with this guy, Naomichi Marufuji, another one that's been around for a while. The rare non-New Japan candidate here, and is a heavyweight as well. So what do you think of Marufuji?
I came to this conclusion this afternoon when I was thinking about this. I'm a hard no on Marufuji as a singles. I would lean yes as Kenta as a singles candidate. And I would really like to explore Kenta Fuji as a tag team on this ballot. But Marufuji, looking at his solo work, looking at his career through the lens of what he did as a singles wrestler, I'm good on that. I legend, yes. Enjoyable, absolutely. Hall of Famer, no.
I mean, as a draw, I think you have to look at his first title reign was an infamous flop.
Yes.
Although not completely. Again, much like Ibushi's title reign, it's not really of his own doing. But he himself has never proven to be a Hall of Fame level draw afterwards, nor even particularly a top level draw in his own company. It kind of seems like he avoids trying to hold the belt as much as possible and let others carry it. He has a level of fame and popularity for being such a popular and over guy during the good days of Noah. And he can still be counted on to make a splash in other Japanese companies. And that's kind of like the main positive of his as a drawing category. He's had multiple successful runs representing Noah, whether it's in All Japan multiple times or New Japan multiple times. He's done that, but I just don't see anything that puts him as a Hall of Fame level star overall in terms of like box office for the majority of his career.
I completely agree with that. He's somebody that weirdly means more outside of Noah than he does in Noah, and that's a strange conundrum there. You know, the Okada stuff from 2016 is some of my favorite stuff that Okada's ever done. The All Japan stuff that you mentioned is great. It's not there for me, but I do love Marufuji, and I sometimes get annoyed when people slight him because I think people overall are harder on him than they should be.
In-ring, to me, his peak was very, very high. I think he has – okay, so just for me personally – I've done a show on must-watch matches where it was Kenta and Marufuji from 2006. That, to me, was the first ever Japanese match I ever saw, and it was the greatest match of all time, in my opinion. But even besides that, I consider him one of the top overall performers in the 2000s because you look at his career, whether it was as a junior heavyweight, a heavyweight, tag teams, junior tags, other companies, other countries. He was completely awesome in the 2000s. In every role he was put in, injuries took a real chunk out of what he could do, and he's really toned down his style over the years. He's another guy, so like to me, I look at him kind of similar to a Naito now, where it's like, if he's motivated, he could go in there and have great matches, but those appearances have been very fleeting. I enjoyed his 2014 title reign up until the disastrous Suzuki-gun invasion. I thought his title reign before that, when Kenta left, he carried the company, and he was a sleeper MVP-level guy in 2014. Since then, he's good for some good moments here and there, but motivation feels like as big of an issue as an injury, and I wouldn't say he overly excites me when I see his name come up. But regardless, those first 10 years, I think he was an exceptional in-ring performer for the 2000s.
I love his work. I mean, again, it's, you know, at this point, I just kind of cross my fingers and hope for maybe one or two good Marufuji matches a year because his body's so broken down. But no, historically, I mean, he's incredible. You know, I think the Noah junior heavyweight style of the basically 2002 through 2006 is
yeah.
It was some of the best wrestling I've ever seen, and Marufuji was a catalyst for that.
I think you could also say he's an influential guy in-ring style-wise. To me, he's directly influential to a lot of people. He had a much greater presence overall in the U.S. than a lot of his contemporaries during the indie boom of the mid-2000s, and we saw people directly, like, and I mean directly, in some cases, take from him and Kenta's moveset to a pretty extreme degree. There's times where you could see a Kenta and Marufuji match and they ain't even in the building, you know, like coming in there with some of these indie guys. You know, I think that tells you something. And look no further. I kind of said it with Shima with the Meteora. How many guys adapted some variation of the sliced bread once he started doing it? You know, I feel like he is a guy that's been a very influential in-ring. I think we run into the same flaws for me as the other modern candidates, that he doesn't really feel like a legend to me. And I think a vast majority of his run coming outside of New Japan is going to hurt him overall. But in a way, I also think that's kind of meaningful, because he's pretty well known even among English fans, despite being in NOAH a majority of his career. That's not easy to do, but he can say that to his name. And I thought it was interesting that if you look at his career compared to Sugira's, Sugira dropped off and he didn't. But Sugira's title runs were almost universally more successful, and he's been way more consistent over the last 20 years. I just wonder, and I put down in my notes, did that Okada match in the G1 run really mean that much to the voters? That
I think that did, because 2016 New Japan really had a special buzz to it, and that G1 threw that King of Pro Wrestling show. For a lot of people, that is probably when they were most tuned into New Japan. And also, his other most famous run is the glory years of NOAH. So I have never really thought about this before. He is probably to American fans, he might be the most famous non-New Japan wrestler there is. I'm not going to count Kenta, because he was in WWE and he's now in New Japan. It's probably Mara Fuji. I've never really thought about that before, but Tozawa's gone, Shingo's in New Japan, Mara Fuji's probably the answer.
Yeah, and that's what I was thinking, that's a very impressive claim, even though I think at face value it hurts him. But everybody kind of knows him, even though he's never actually been under contract to those bigger companies in the West. So I do think that's something to think about, at least. So I'm glad we got to that point. But, it'll be interesting to see his voting candidacy. I think he has a case, but I don't think he'll get in, personally.
No, I don't see that happening either.
Yeah. Meiko Satomura here. A Joshi candidate, do you have an opinion on Satomura, or am I going to carry this?
not a strong one. You know, I respect her output. I understand that there's some people that think she has an incredibly strong, influential tab in her resume. I don't see it with her. I really – and I will say this when we speed through our modern North American candidates. I don't buy – modern Joshi, and I understand she's been around a lot longer, but anybody associated with modern Joshi or modern WWE, I can't vote for them. I don't think the business is strong enough. I don't think they have any sort of historical impact that is worthy of being in this Hall of Fame. So while Satomura has been around for a long time and I respect what she's done, she's not somebody that I spend more than a second thinking about here.
I think that's changing with Stardom. Bushiroad really going in and back that. I think that will change, but I understand where you're coming from. As a draw, it's hard to argue that she's at a Hall of Fame level, because she had the misfortune of her prime being in the middle of the dark ages of Joshi. I think if you're going to point to a positive for her on that end, she helped keep things afloat during those days, and they were bad days, believe me. She started a company that still lives on to this day, even after she left it, and she's in WWE now, obviously. It was a low level in comparison to the Hall of Fame level, but back then, whenever other Joshi companies, let's say they needed somebody modern to come in and maybe give a little bit of a boost, she was the go-to woman, you know, that they would go to. And I'm not going to sit here and tell you Sendai was a major player or anything like that. They weren't. But she was very helpful to Sendai as a region itself. And we kind of talked about this earlier with Dragon Gate. Sendai Girls is very important to the Sendai region. And I kind of, in my notes, compared it to Michinoku Pros being up in the Northeast region. Sendai Girls doesn't have those these days type of shows or anything like that you can point to as a big attendance. But she is also one of the greatest modern Joshi wrestlers in demand in terms of outside of Japan. She's almost universally recognized as a legend, and for years, she'd be one of the first people called despite not having a major promotion backing her. She's won championships and tournaments and stuff from Progress, WXW, Chikara, Fight Club Pro. She mainly focused in her home country on training and running Sendai Girls for a lot of time. They didn't even have a belt for like the first 10 years of their run. So she doesn't have like a ton of title cred post Gaia, but in Gaia, she was a top star. That was like the tail end of Joshi being kind of relevant, into that. Even in DDT a few years ago, she scored the top title, like, in a majority men's company. She meant something. Like, yeah, I think that you can't say she meant nothing. She did mean something, but I don't know if it was necessarily Hall of Fame worthy by the Hall of Fame standards.
Yeah, I understand the idea of voting for Sotomayor, and I don't knock the people that do. Now, maybe this year when, you know, you have limited votes and the ballot's pretty crowded, maybe I would hold off on Sotomayor for a year. But I get the argument behind it, but it is a little bit like Hayabusa, where there's nothing that really puts me over the edge in any of the categories.
Yeah, I think in-ring-wise, she's Hall of Fame caliber, in my opinion. She hasn't always had the talent around her, and certainly didn't have the opportunities. But when she's put into position, she always kicked ass, man. when Gaia was in the late 90s all the way to the late 2010s, her performance level was extremely high. She had a legendary feud with Aja Kong. She had the last great Hokuto match in 2001. She had
I love that match. Chad Campbell, I don't know how well you know Chad, but he recommended
that.
Yeah,
I know Soup.
Yeah, he recommended that about a year ago, and it blew my mind when I watched it.
Love Chad Campbell. Shout out to that brother. But yeah, that's a great match. She had an excellent match versus Toyota in 2003 in Gaia. She was feuding with people like Hamada, Kaoru. In Sendai, she was doing some stuff that's like super unheralded and probably not even possible to find anymore. But she trained a lot of people like Dash Chisako. She's still around. Her sister, Sachiho Sendai, she retired a few years ago. Azumi Hyuga, who was one of like the greatest dark talents. Nobody ever remembers her, but she was an amazing wrestler. Tyrannosaurus Okuda, which, come on, that's a great ring name, at least. But she was a good wrestler. I remember these days. I remember them. They were big when I first started watching 12, 13 years ago. She had a feud with Kana, like Asuka, WWE now. She had many matches with her. She worked early on in Stardom, the early days, when Yuzupan was the big star, along with Nanai Takahashi. She won the red belt, match of the year level matches with Kairi Hojo, one of my favorite matches in Stardom, 2015. They had Io Shirai as well, Mayu. She faced all of them. So to me, she's got quality and longevity on her side. So in-ring she is. Influence is tough. She trained a lot of people. Chihiro's still around. She helped people like Kagetsu was her protege. Mizunami was her trainee. She's a big freelancer now. So it's like she's got roots in all of these places. I don't think that she'll get voted in, but I actually think that she probably helps a lot of the WWE girls nowadays, but that really hasn't borne any fruit because NXT UK is the ultimate dead zone. Like, that's the dark, like, that's pitch black dark ages compared to even the Joshi scene. So I think that's kind of like, it's hard to vote for her when she's like just kind of in this purgatory, in my opinion. But she's a legend. She's inspirational women's wrestlers, even just to face her. But I don't think that she'll be able to get in, unfortunately.
Yeah, I don't see it happening for her either. And then I think we'll see, it'll obviously be quite some time given how young the company is and how young some of those wrestlers are before we see anybody from Stardom creep their way onto the ballot other than Rossi Ogawa, who, well, you know, we're not going to talk about non-wrestlers here. I unfortunately don't have the time, but I am a hard no on Rossi Ogawa being in the Hall of Fame.
Hey, some people are giving you like fist pumps right now because I know he's got a lot of haters.
If I would recommend people, I gave my thoughts on Rossi on the Open the Voice Gate that was uploaded on October 19th. So I Mike Spears and I did some Hall of Fame talk at the start of that show, and Mike and I are both very outspoken about how overrated we think Ogawa is as a businessman. So
yeah.
That is there for the people that want that. But it'll be quite some time before we have any of those Stardom girls that make their way onto the Hall of Fame ballot if they do. So I don't see any new Joshi being inducted, but obviously Sotomayor is the strongest of the bunch. I get why people vote for her.
Well, maybe there'll be a new Joshi inducted with the next candidates here. The 1987 gold combo. We only got two more left anyway. Three more, actually. 1987 gold combo. Manami Toyota and Toshio Yamada. And you said you were out of the tag teams with the guys. Do the Joshi girls count as well?
I really don't know anything about this tag team historically. I love Toyota. I'm a big fan of Yamada. I did my Joshi viewing was very limited until the fall of 2020, about 2 years ago, when I really sat down and made some time for the glory years of All Japan Women. And, you know, over that time, I expanded to JWP and I fell in love with Dynamite Kanzai, who is now one of my favorite wrestlers of all time. But I don't know as a tag team, I don't know what they bring to the table. So if you have info, please enlighten me.
Yeah, Toyota's already in. This is kind of similar to Holy Demon Army, where it feels like one person couldn't get in as a single, so now we're putting in the tag team to try and shoehorn them in. Also, I would encourage everybody starting in November. I have a lot of written stuff that I've already written before covering Toyota's career, like a ton of big matches with her and Yamada as well. Every day I'm going to post a new article free for everybody on the Patreon, patreon.com/EasternLariat. Starting in November, it's going to be every day links to matches on YouTube. They're all on YouTube. Lots of fun going over Toyota's career. And Yamada plays a huge role in that. So here's the thing. They, in their peak year, they were the number one draws in Joshi. They were placed in main events in the successful interpromotional era. They were the main events over red belt title matches, including the hugely, hugely important match where Aja Kong beat Bull Nakano, because they had had like a Bull had been the champion for almost 3 years, and Aja was her feud the whole time. It was like clearly a passing of the torch moment. But in that show, the main event was Toyota and Yamada versus the aforementioned Dynamite Kanzai and Mayumi Ozaki, who also should be a candidate in my opinion. They were the main event of that. The show with the the famous and legendary Akira Hokuto and Shinobu Kandori brawl, Yamada and Toyota were in the main event against Megumi Kudo and Combat Toyota. They were in the main events, and in both cases, they were against outsider teams, and with JWP's team in particular, that's a smaller company. FMW was a primarily men's company, and yet they still put them in there on top as the main events. And if you count them as tag team champions and as a major tag team, they might not have even been champions at that point, but they were a major tag team in 92. They had a feud with each other, which culminated in the legendary hair versus hair match, which literally got ripped off nearly beat for beat 30 years later with Tom Nakano versus Julia's hair match, where they did the exact same ending to that with none of the storyline implications of what Toyota and Yamada did. And even though that match was really good wrestling-wise, but the ending of it I was not very big fan of because it was so blatantly directly influenced by this. But between 92 to 94, they had a ton of amazing matches. They are historically great. In particular, their three-match series with Kanzai and Ozaki, that's hailed by many as among the best tag rivalries.
Some of my favorite matches of all time, and I am of the variety where I think the final match is the best of the three.
The final match, huh? Okay. I'm down with that.
The pacing of the final match is one of the most insane things that I've ever seen. And if the finish wasn't weird, I'm not going to say botched, but if the finish wasn't weird, it'd be a 5-star match. That is one of the most mind-blowing encounters I've ever seen.
Yeah, and many people point to the November, the first match, the November 92 match as the one. The second one I really like too, I think is underrated. I think they're all three great, obviously. A lot of people have different opinions, but that's hailed by a lot of people as like an amazing tag feud. They've got numerous big matches versus like Double Inoue, Kyoko and Takako, Jungle Jack, you know, Aja Kong and Bison Kimura. You know, even their one-night return match in 97 when the company was spiraling completely out of control and people were leaving, it was just a horrible situation in 97 for All Japan Women's. But their return did a way better than expected number and produced a hell of a match versus LCO. They were an excellent working tag team and had a great run of quality matches, including the second match in their series, the one in April 93. That was the match of the year in The Observer for 1993. So they have that. Influence-wise, I think if you count their singles work, like their feud against each other, then they're like a slam dunk, yes. If no, then it's probably not true in the influence candidates. You know, they were far from the first big tag team in Zenjo. They just happened to be one of the best. And they weren't around long enough, and that's really the knock against them, is that their run was a 3-year run, basically. And their 1 year, the 92 and 93, that was as big as any year from any of these candidates, pretty much, you can point to. But it was still only 1 to 3 years. So I think that you're going to have to reconcile that. But they have a great run. I think they're great candidates, to be honest with you. I'd vote for them.
Does Yamada have any sort of case as a singles wrestler in the Hall of Fame, or is her work primarily built off of this tag team?
I think she's much more known as the tag team as a shingle. She was never the main star of Zenjo. She had a white belt run. But she was just never a top star. And she had some good matches here and there, especially with somebody like that you could pair her against. Because if you remember those tag matches, she was often paired against Kanzai, and they have great stylistic chemistry in that they both kick very, very hard at the end of the day. And so people like her, Hota, you could see her have some big matches pretty much in there. But I don't think that she's a Hall of Famer as a singles, personally. I think Toyota definitely is. Her,
yeah, of course, yeah.
She's a great wrestler. I don't want to, like, you know, discount her. But to me, her biggest work is with Toyota. And even her best singles match is the hair match, I would say.
Okay, interesting. I wish she had a bit of a stronger case as a singles, because, again, I don't like the way Dave set up these tag teams of the guys, the yeah. people that are in with the people that aren't, and I think it's going to scare me away from voting for them in the future, but as a tag team, you just made a pretty compelling case, and it also made me want to go back and rewatch some of those matches, which I will definitely be doing later this week.
Well, that's what this show is really all about. I've accomplished my mission. I just want more people to watch Zinjo in the prime. Hopefully all the listeners follow his lead and watch more of Zinjo in his prime, and particularly the 87 gold combo. And like I said, follow along on the Patreon. It's free for everybody, by the way. Those are reviews. So you can go on there. I got a ton of matches. Some of them kind of fall apart. You mentioned some weird endings, but some Toyota matches had some crazy endings at the time.
Yes. Some very ambitious finishes.
Yeah, so not all of them paid off entirely, but that's part of Toyota's charm, is that she was kind of crazy, you know, at the time. It would try many different things. But the last team before we get to the final one, Holy Demon Army, Toshiaki Kawada and Akira Taue. Now, this is interesting because you said you'd be off the teams, but to me, this particular team has to be considered one of the greatest of all time in the ring, surely. So what do you say about the Holy Demon Army as a vote?
Oh, I mean, other than the Young Bucks, they're the greatest tag team of all time. And, I said in 2019 that the Bucks were the greatest tag team of all time. And in the last 3 years, I think they've only pulled away from Holy Demon Army, whereas I kind of thought it was a toss-up maybe, or at least a little bit closer in 2019. The thing that I struggle with here is, one, Dave capped these categories at 5 votes this year, and I'm voting for Shima. I'm voting for Ishii, I'm voting for Ibushi, I'm voting for Naito, and the guy that, you know, we haven't talked about yet, I'm voting for Shingo. So that puts Holy Demon Army on the outside, and much in the same way that I struggle with, you know, the other tag teams, I think had I gotten a ballot last year, I would have voted for Taue as a singles, but there's something about the way these tag teams are set up that I don't like the way they're possibly being represented in this Hall of Fame. So while, of course, any sensible person voting in any wrestling Hall of Fame is going to go, yes, Holy Demon Army should be in there, I don't argue that. But for what I value out of this Hall of Fame, I'm not sold on the idea that I want somebody like Kawada, even if he's one of the greatest wrestlers of all time, having 2 entries. I would have much rather Taue just got in on his own. And I go back and forth, but I largely agree that Taue should have been in on his own.
Oh, I think that, like, to me, Taue is like a no-brainer candidate, in my opinion. Like, much more than we talked about Yamada and Toyota. To me, Taue is like what leagues above Yamada as his own candidacy. A lot of that is built off of the Holy Demon Army run as well, obviously. But he's done so many great things that I was, I know that the argument against him is that he was the 4th best of the 4 pillars, and maybe anybody could have done what he could have done. But that's like the people who stupidly argue Robert Gibson sucks. If he was so easy to replace, why did Ricky Morton never, ever find anybody as good to be his partner as Robert Gibson? At the end of the day, Taue was the one there. There's a reason it's the 4 pillars and not the 3 pillars. at the end of the day. I strongly believe Taue is a Hall of Famer. And I think that this was kind of, again, I kind of get the feeling this is a cheesy kind of way for Dave or whoever pushed these candidates to try and get these guys in on their own, whether it's Yamada or Taue or whatever. So they're giving them a second chance with this tag team run. But I mean, I can't think of an argument against them, to be honest with you. They're amazing at the end of the day.
I probably would have gotten over my tag team rule that, again, I'm not locked in on, but I think for this year it's the way it's going to be. Had I been able to vote for 6 people, I would have voted for Holy Demon Army. I'm capped at 5. I'm going to go with the singles guys. I think all of them need a little bit of a push, whereas I think Taue and Kawada will probably get in this year. I think this is the way that Taue is going to finally get in.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think that I get the feeling that they're going to be in, to be honest. Very interesting thing there. And finally, you mentioned him, Shingo Takagi, the The former world champion, the IWGP champion in New Japan, and a multi-year Dragon Gate top star, big time ace. So many amazing matches. He has 31 matches at 9 or better on Cage Match, just below Ibushi and Ishii. They're all very close there, but he has a lot. What say you? This is your time, Case. Argue for Shingo.
Shingo could have wrestled his entire career in front of zero fans and hold zero influence over the modern wrestling world, and I think influence is the weakest of his categories. But his output is so strong, I think it is utterly foolish to have a Hall of Fame that he is not involved with. He might be the single greatest wrestler of all time. When I did the Greatest Wrestler Ever project in 2021, he was in my top five. He was number five on the list. I went Kobashi, Tenryu, Hansen, Fujinami, and Shingo. And if I had to vote today, Shingo is probably surpassing Fujinami and Hansen. I think that much of Shingo's work. He is just a marvelous pro wrestler who has succeeded every single time the ball has rolled his way. He has a drawing record that I can briefly discuss, but it's a stop and start argument with me of his in-ring ability. He is one of the greatest wrestlers to ever live, bar none, end of discussion.
Yeah, and when you put it that way, how can you argue? At the end of the day, the in-ring candidacy is so strong. You know, I mean, he's a great worker. I think pretty much everybody agrees with that that's seen him. An incredible performer. He won the Most Outstanding Award last year in the Observer Newsletter, in fact, as well as Japanese MVP. And he was a top three in terms of Fez Flair. So he had
And him winning Japanese MVP is crazy. Given what I talked about earlier with the Tokyo Sports Awards, I understand he's New Japan full time now, but I know that hurt people to give that to him. That is crazy that he won that.
And I kind of brought this in sort of Naito's deal. He, overcame all expectations, I think, when he came to New Japan with how far he's risen. When he came in as a junior, I always thought he'd be a Goto-level, Ishii-level guy. And I love those guys. Those are my favorite guys in the company. But they never get pushed as much as I want. If Dylan ran New Japan, those guys would be world champions already. But I kind of felt that that's where he was going to be slotted. But, somehow he's really jumped up and been a big time player. He kind of fell back, this year. I hate what he's doing with, I don't know if you've seen it, hopefully you haven't. I hate the stuff he's doing with Phantasmo right now. Terrible work, in my opinion, from all involved. Not Shingo's fault at all, but just I hate the comedy stuff they're doing. The Who's Your Daddy, all that.
Yeah, it's horrible.
Yeah, like I said, I'm just not a big fan. He's really fallen down. It really feels like even his title run, it was like he was kind of slotted in a similar role, even though I think he's a way better wrestler, to what Jay is this year, where it's ultimately Shingo was the guy to hold the title until Okada could win it at the Dome again. And I think that that's where we're heading even now this year. They're doing the same stuff as they usually do, even though I like Okada a lot and love what he's doing right now. But Shingo still, he overcame all expectations. He had, he won the match of the year in 2019, in Observer as well. Number two match of the year in 2021, both Will Ospreay as well. He has a ton of candidacy, going in there. Top three and four match of the year in 2010 with Bryan Danielson and BB Hulk. I think that was the hair versus hair match with Hulk as well.
Yeah, hair versus hair match versus Hulk, and then that Danielson match that just because of the unfortunate result of the Dragon Gate USA library being owned by the WWE and me being told directly they see no value in that library despite the fact that they own it, it's going to be really hard for people to seek out Danielson versus Shingo, but that is one of his many five-star matches that I think he has under his belt. And to your point about him overachieving in New Japan, that is – been my whole thing is, people can tell I'm obviously a huge Shingo fan, but when he jumped, I thought, okay, maybe he wins the junior title once, and it would be cool if he was in the never mix. And
yeah,
the story of Shingo's career is that he's just so good that no matter where he goes, he ends up being the top guy. For him to have that series of matches he had with Okada, it brought me such joy. I mean, it's weird, like, they had better matches as time went on, but I have such a soft spot in my heart for their first match, which was the 2020 G1 match. I think it might have been 10-10-20, because I had a very bad feeling about New Japan as soon as Naito won the double belt, and that's not even a reflection of Naito. I just knew that the 8-year story that was being told was over, and I wasn't sure how they were going to advance after that. And I didn't really like the direction for New Beginning, and then COVID hit. And then once New Japan came back with those empty arena shows, something was just off immediately. And I don't know what this is, but I don't like it. They really went heavy into the evil stuff, which I am – it's not that that is beloved by any means, but I might be the biggest detractor of all of that. I just see no value in it whatsoever. And then there's this Shingo versus Okada match that was a dream match to me. It lived up to the hype, and it was everything that I wanted from New Japan. And I still, 2 years after the fact, have such warm memories of that match, let alone everything else that they would continue to do. I mean, he would have zero shot of getting in if he was just a Dragon Gate wrestler. I really hope that the New Japan name value pushes him over the top, because he's Shingo Takagi, and it's a Hall of Fame, and he deserves a place there.
Yeah, match quality, very high, well-respected by a vast majority of fans. Very believable as an in-ring candidate. He's always been turned to by the promotions on top for the much of his career. He's seen as a trustworthy main eventer by everyone. There's something I found interesting, an anomaly, or I was wondering if there's some kind of secret reason behind this that you would know, being such a Dragon Gate historian that you are. So his Kobe World main event in 2018 versus Yoshino, this was so much lower than the year prior, and even lower than the year after. Why was that year so low in comparison to the Shima and T-Hawk main event in 2017?
Two reasons. One, you're coming right off of the heels of the Stronghearts split, and morale was very low. So you're looking at, even though Shingo and Yoshino are the guys that they went to and that they should have gone to, you're looking at just an objectively down period in the company. The other reason, and this is why I wish Mike Spears was here, because he would know a little bit more than me, but my understanding of the situation is that when President Okamura was running the company, in the same way that now when All Japan runs a big show, they sell a ton of basically like sponsorship packages, and they have all of these groups that come in and buy tickets at a discounted rate. That is what Okamura used to do for Kobe World. And that year, which was President Kido's first Kobe World, there were none of those tickets really available. I'm 98% sure I'm correct in that. So it took down the number. Also, you have to remember this was Kido in charge, so it's a shoot number instead of the inflated number from 2017.
That's always worth considering. But in the
moment, the report coming out of that building was, yes, it was way lower than most years. It wasn't necessarily like panic button cause for concern, but it did not do as well as 2017 did or as 2019 did.
Yeah, I just wanted to consider that because I thought that really jumped out to me, and I was wondering what happened in that
year. I remember when we got that attendance number, and kind of like everybody like, oh my god, oh no, we're in trouble. And then it later explained to me like it doesn't look good, but it's not as bad as it actually looks.
Yeah, but regardless, Shingo, big fan. You're gonna vote for him for sure. Let's go ahead and speed through these U.S. candidates. We're not going to break them down the way we did the Japan ones, but we'll just go through them one by one. We kind of give your a broad thought, so to speak, of them.
Yep. Dylan, I've got about 10 minutes left before I have to go. Let's rifle through these bad boys.
Okay, let's go through them. We're going to speed through it here. So again, very weird, small gripe. I don't understand why some people are on the modern instead of the historical, and that would count for Tully Blanchard and Arn Anderson with J.J. Dillon. What do you think of them?
Good tag team. I love Arn. I will not be voting for these guys.
Yeah, exact same opinion I would have. They're not a Hall of Fame team by the standards, but we love Arn Anderson. It totally was a good tag team partner for him, just not long enough. Junkyard Dog, what do you think of him?
Junkyard Dog is at the top of my list of guys that I really want to look at. I want to give a shout-out to Rich Lotto over at VoicesOfWrestling.com. He wrote a Junkyard Dog article this year that I thought was really compelling, with the crux of the argument being, hey, if this guy had done this in Madison Square Garden, we wouldn't even be having this conversation. He would already be in, and it wouldn't be that nobody would question it. And that particularly stuck out to me, a way that I had not framed his career yet in my mind. And I think that pushed me over the top to vote for him. I'm not all the way there yet, but I'm about 75% yes on Junkyard Dog purely for his box office resume.
Big shout out to Rich Latta. That's my boy. I loved his article. Reposted that. Talked to him about it. Love JYD. I personally think he should be in as well. But we will see what the voters go with here, because he's been around for a long time. So the next candidates, I don't think I could talk about unbiasedly. I am from Memphis for all purposes. Jerry Lawler and Bill Dundee. What do you think of them?
Okay, so if I remember correctly, Dundee was on the ballot last year as a singles wrestler.
Same thing in Japan where somebody fell off and they put him in this tag team to get in there.
Okay, did he fall off the ballot last year?
Oh, I don't have it in front of me right now.
I don't either. So Joe Lanza made a really compelling case for Bill Dundee as a singles wrestler. And it was one of those where I listened to this at a time where I didn't have a ballot. And I put an asterisk next to it as something to revisit if I ever had the chance to vote for him. But now he's in this tag team, and so I'm not interested in even looking into these guys as a unit. But Dundee as a singles wrestler, I was getting pretty invested in last year.
Yes, all the Memphis guys should be in.
All the Memphis guys and all the Drangate guys, great point.
Yes, Dave Brown, Sputnik Monroe, put them all in, pretty much. Edge, what about Edge?
Okay, so this might surprise some people, but I am actually a very big Edge fan. I think as a wrestler who works in the WWE house style, Edge is probably the best version of that of anybody I've ever seen, but he holds no influence other than maybe just the idea of TLC matches, and he tanked all three WWE shows when he returned in 2021, and although I wasn't taking him seriously as a candidate before that, you cannot vote for him after he destroyed television ratings for three different shows last year. I like Edge, but it is a no.
I definitely agree with your last sentence. No. Goldberg, what about him?
I am 50-50 on Goldberg right now. You know, Goldberg I'm close on, Junkyard Dog I'm close on, and then I've got one surefire slam dunk guy that I'm going to vote for in Modern U.S., but it comes down to the argument of, can you tell the story of professional wrestling without Bill Goldberg? And the answer is no. You know, he was the hottest thing in wrestling for a short period of time. And also, ever since he came back, and I think it was 2016, it was when he came back and wrestled Brock for the first time, he's been a draw. It's the weirdest thing. I'm not interested in it personally, but undoubtedly Goldberg means something at the box office, and if his career wasn't ruined once by Kevin Nash's incompetence and another time by Vince McMahon's incompetence, I think it would be a much easier pill to swallow to put him in. I'm 50-50 on him right now, and I could see myself by the time, you know, a gun to my head, ballots due, voting for Bill Goldberg.
Yeah, it should be interesting. I like Goldberg. I think he shouldn't be put in the category of warrior and all those lame big guys. I think he's kind of underrated, actually, in the ring. Not a great worker by any stretch of the imagination, but had good matches against DDP and had a great physical presence that you can't teach. The later return was great. I completely agree with everything you said. I don't know if he would be on my top of the list to vote, but he should get consideration. What about the Hardy Boys?
I just don't see it. I like both of them as individuals. I like both of them as a tag team. I think for once there is a tag team on here that is properly slotted as a tag team.
Yeah, for once, yes.
I can't write them off. I think some people are going to look at them and go, oh, absolutely not. I think you have to look at the house. Well, I'm already – you know what? I was going to talk myself into it, and as soon as I started, I talked myself out of it. No on the Hardy Boys. They're great. They've had some of the best matches of all time. I love the revival run they had in 2014 where they wrestled the Bucks and the Briscoes, but no on the Hardys.
Yeah, I may give them another look. My thought is no, but they do have – they have stuff you can point to if you are a supporter of them, in my opinion.
There are names on this list that I won't consider for a second. The Hardys are very easily above that.
Yeah, I agree with that. Becky Lynch.
Speaking of names I won't consider for a second, no shot. She was on the ballot last year. I don't know how she got more than 10%. I have no issue with Becky, but no.
Yeah, love Becky. She's cool and all. I don't think she's a Hall of Famer. Again, one of these modern candidates I wish we had more time on to see their legacy, but I wouldn't vote for her either. Nash and Hall, the Outsiders.
I would like to know your thought on this before I share mine.
No. I don't think... The thing you're going to point to, or people will point to, is that they changed the game by coming to WCW, but Hogan was so instrumental to that, and I just don't see anything else they have in terms of in-ring or influence that would make me want to vote for them.
That's all I needed to hear. I was fully prepared to buy into like a red pill Hall and Nash argument, but you're right.
Not for me.
You're 1,000% right. Thank you for talking me off of that ledge. It's a no from me.
Yeah, where never a draw is, you know, Nash is the worst champion in WWF.
Yeah, that's you're exactly right. Thank you for I was really ready to go out on a limb there. Thank you for talking sense into me.
Okay, well, that's what I'm here for, people. Paul Orndorff, Mr. Wonderful.
I'm a no on Orndorff. Again, you know, I really like the Voices of Wrestling flagship coverage they do on this every year. They made a very compelling case for Orndorff last year. He's good. Very important historically, not there for me. I wish he was a little bit stronger in the ring, and I think I would buy into it maybe, but I'm just not there with him.
Yeah, legendary character, big draw. I think you could easily make a case for him. I'd like to do a little bit more research myself, actually, on him. But he's one of those 50-50 guys for me. If I voted in America, he would be a guy I would definitely look at. Unlike Randy Orton, who I would never vote for.
No, I don't. I don't. Who is this for? Other than Dave, who is voting for Randy Orton?
And I think even he turned on him last year.
You're right. Yeah.
Yeah, even after all these years of loving him. But yeah, I love you, Dave, but Orton's not a Hall of Famer. Yeah. At the end of the day. The New Age Outlaws, Billy Gunn and Road Dogg.
Look, I say this with all due respect, but if you vote for the New Age Outlaws, I do not think you should be voting in this Hall of Fame.
You just love the Attitude Era. If you vote for them, have no sense of anything else.
You're Ariel Hawaii, who is talking to Tony Khan. Wasn't the Attitude Era the greatest? And Tony Khan's like, no, it wasn't.
Yes, we're going to test to who votes for them. We're going to have to trace down these votes. CM Punk, here's your guy living in Chicago. Go ahead and sell us on him.
Living in Chicago and being a straight edge. Look.
Shout out to them. That's good.
I would have voted for CM Punk if he never stepped foot in an AEW ring. I can't believe that he didn't get in on his first run, and then I can't believe he didn't get in last year, and now he's not going to get in this year because people have this weird vendetta against him. He is everything that wrestling should be, and arguably to a fault, but I said for all of the years he was gone, wrestling is better with CM Punk than without it. And I hold that statement true to this day. We saw what he did for AEW the year he was there. I think there, you know, while of course there were negatives, there were undoubted positives to it as well. The Rampage number that he drew, the fact that he sold out the United Center on his name, not even being announced alone, the business uptick that they saw this past year, all of that should get him in. And then you factor into one, like I talked about earlier with Samoa Joe, the fact that CM Punk was a draw on the indies, and I do think that matters. You look at his influence of the doors that he opened, being a guy of his size from his background that got into WWE and succeeded. And also the fact that I don't understand how this isn't like a bigger deal to people, that he was the Randy Savage to John Cena as Hulk Hogan, that he was this viable number two that outsold Cena in merch, that headlined TV shows, would have headlined pay-per-views if they weren't so Cena-pilled at that time. Like, this was the top guy in the company, and he felt hot, and there's weird business stuff with him where some of it worked, some of it didn't. But this guy was a superstar. Like, what are we doing here where we think there's a pro wrestling Hall of Fame that he doesn't belong in? It just doesn't make any sense to me that he's not in.
The chick magnet. I said it earlier. I think of all the candidates besides Naito, he's got the most passionate fan base. Like, just in general, I think the fans, if you are a Punk fan, you love CM Punk. But in his case, I think Naito, it's more like if you don't like him, you're kind of ambivalent. With Punk, it's like you hate him if you don't like him. But much like myself, I wish I could slap him. But besides that, you know, Hall of Fame wise, he's definitely got stuff you can point to. It's not like he's a nobody in wrestling. You can't just ignore all the stuff that he did, even in AEW, this latest run. It'll be interesting to see how. I think his vote will be very interesting after everything that's happened and all the controversy. Will that make him go up or down? Because I could see it going either way, kind of.
I think people are too fickle, and I think they're going to hold a personal grudge over something that has no business having any sort of personal relationships, you know, with this Hall of Fame. You know, I would vote for Chris Benoit if he was on the ballot tomorrow. This isn't the moral Hall of Fame. This is the Pro Wrestling Hall of Fame, and CM Punk did far less crime, and I think will be weirdly held at the stake. I just think there are people that won't be able to separate the two, and I think he'll suffer for it, which is a bummer because, again, to me, he should have gotten 3 years ago when he got on the ballot for the first time. After a year in AEW, it will be absurd to me if he does not get in.
It's going to be interesting, like I said, because I could see some old school people like thinking that this chaotic stuff that he brings is actually a good thing. Like, because everybody talks about him, like love him or hate him, it's like he's one of the most talked about wrestlers ever. I would say, just in terms of that metric. What about the head of the table? We're on the last stretch here, Roman Reigns.
Roman Reigns' entire career has been a failure. There's no argument for it here. There's no historically great period of in-ring for him. There's no influence. And his entire career has been marked by him not being as big of a star as they'd like him to be. While the company's making more money than ever, the way that normal wrestling companies are measured have never been lower, and it's been with him on top. I can't believe he stayed on the ballot this past year, and I see zero argument whatsoever. I think he is actually, other than like Becky and Trish and Orton, he might have the weakest candidacy in modern U.S. and Canada.
Yeah, the title reign, I think people will go with pushes a lot, even if it's deserved or not deserved or whatever metrics are behind it. They put a lot behind him, like you said, for years and years, but no tangible evidence we could see in that end. I wouldn't vote for him either, but he's another guy in his prime. I think if his influence is – not influence, but just his legacy is stronger in WWE in 10, 20 years, we might be able to look at him better than now. But right now I would say no.
I would just like to find a positive in his career, and I have yet to really find one.
He holds the title for many times.
Sweet.
Yes, that's what I'm giving you right now. Sergeant Slaughter, the Sarge.
In the same way that I'm 50-50 on Goldberg but leaning yes, I am 50-50 on Slaughter but leaning no. I would like to do more research. I've got about a month to really dive into his legacy, and I will be more than happy to do that, but right now it is a no for me.
Yeah, very great worker in his prime, more known for the WWE stuff, which isn't as great for the most part. The AWA run gets cited by Dave as a reason he's not voted in, so there's ups and downs to him. I like him. Of everybody, he'd probably be one of the better candidates, in my opinion, in the U.S., but what about Trish?
No. the fact that she's on again, I don't get it. It's so weird to me.
The positive is at least Charlotte's not on the ballot.
and that is a win for all of us. Very good point. Thank you for seeing the bright side in life.
I'm always trying to find the silver lining. Steiner Bros, Scott and Rick, what about them?
I am probably down on the Steiners compared to most anyways, and I don't see any of the categories working in their favor here.
I love them as wrestlers. I was a big fan of their tag team. Very cool and fun to watch. I don't know about the rest. I could be swayed for them, but my gut is telling me no. If there's secret stuff on them that I haven't seen yet or some evidence. But I love them as wrestlers. I would be happy to hear this information if it's out there. Final, Devon Eriks, Kevin, Kerry, David. This feels like another one where Kerry didn't get on his own, so now they're putting him in this new version with Kevin and Kerry and David. Do you have any thoughts on them?
I'm willing to hear an argument, but I don't know enough that makes me say yes. I don't know enough, period, but that makes me default to no, and I would love to hear somebody that's really into this Von Erich trio.
One day I will get Fredo Esparza on and we will talk about them because he is from Texas.
I'd love to listen to. That would be very compelling, so please get on that.
Yes, I will. We definitely will do something. Fredo is like my ultimate guy, pretty much. But so we've figured it out. We've gone through everything. Overall, do you want to share your ballot, or is there anybody, like, you said the five in the Japan. Is there anybody you're leaning towards in the U.S.? U.S. was much more of a mixed reaction, it felt like.
Yeah, so Japan, unless something drastic changes, which I don't anticipate it, it's going to be Shingo.
Until you watch Yamada Toyota more.
Shima, Ibushi, Ishii, Naito, Shingo. Those are my five for Japan. For modern U.S. and Canada, I am a 100% yes on CM Punk. I'm about 75% of the way there on Junkyard Dog, and then I am 50-50 on both Goldberg and Sergeant Slaughter.
Okay, interesting. No need to run them down, but do you have anybody in mind for a non-wrestler you're leaning towards?
I am a no for Ogawa, and I still
you hate Ogawa.
I want to make it very clear. I mean, no for Ogawa. I'm going to read that article on Sanshiro Takagi. That name intrigues me. I think it's something I could be sold into, and then after that I need to do a lot of research because I will be voting a non-wrestler, but I am just a no for Ogawa right now.
And that's what matters most, you could say. But Case, thank you so much for taking the time going over the Observer Hall of Fame for Japan and even America as well. I really enjoyed talking to you for this time. I know the fans are going to love this one. Some controversial things, but that's why I love you, because I know you're not afraid to tell it like it is in your mind, even if we disagree. So thank you so much.
I'm only afraid of Tetsuya Naito fans, and I said only mildly positive things about Naito on this episode, so hopefully I don't have any heat coming in that direction. But Dylan, I had a blast. Thank you so much for having me on. I really enjoyed this.
Just remember, fans, I'm the one who said Naito was a Hall of Famer. but no. Like I said, I thought we were fair to everybody there, pretty much. Hopefully you congratulations in the first place to getting the vote in. I know that you take it seriously. You're going to do some more research even after this and come up with even better stuff by the time things go around. We're going to see how it plays out in terms of the overall vote. It's going to be interesting to see. Like I said, on the Eastern Larry, we never really dove into the Hall of Fame for the Observer too much. So let me know what you think of it. It was a lot of fun doing it with you on a personal level. I would love to do it again or come back after the results happen or something like that. But regardless, go ahead and plug your stuff, man. I think everybody kind of knows you, but just say it anyway because it's more fun that way.
Yeah, thank you so much. I'm on Twitter @_inyourcase, and my friend, my good friend Mike Spears and I host the Open the Voice Gate podcast on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. For the most part, episodes come out every Wednesday. We normally record Tuesday night and they're uploaded Wednesday morning. Every once in a while, we'll adjust the schedule to be more timely with like a Cork and Hall show or a big pay-per-view. But I say this trying not to pat myself on the back too much, but we are the go-to source of information for English-speaking Dragon Gate fans. And I think a lot of people recognize that by now, that Mike and I have been doing this for a number of years. You know, I have been covering Dragon Gate on Voices of Wrestling since 2015. I've been doing it for over a third of my life, which is disgusting to think about, but it's the reality that we live in. And this year in particular, I think people are really gelling with the show, and we have more people listening than ever, and we have more feedback than ever, and I love it. So please follow us on Twitter @OpenVoiceGate and subscribe to our podcast, the Open the Voice Gate podcast, because I hate most of what I do in life, but I'm very proud of that show.
These kind of feelings I could totally relate to, Case. So I'm glad we can all agree on that. But I listened to the show. I definitely agree that the Dragon Gate community is very stronger than ever in terms of listening to the show and what you guys have done. I think you've taken the show to the next level as well, in all honesty, you and Mike. Shout out to Iron Mike Spears. You both deserve a lot of credit for what you've been doing. Cannot wait to continue listening to that. And just for me, just follow us on Twitter @EasternLariat. I'm @Viva_0. Check out the Patreon, patreon.com/EasternLariat. Check out our last episode. Me and Kinchstalker did Cameron Lee talking about Inoki. 4 hours almost on Inoki. We covered everything that you won't even see in the Meltzer obituary. We covered some stuff. And me and Strig, we're covering stuff on the Patreon. The first episode's free for everybody. The rest is on the $5 tier. It's some of his best matches. Just as a wrestler, it's a lot of fun stuff. Can't wait to get into more stuff overall in the wrestling scene. We got some big shows coming up. Dragon Gate's got a show coming up at the start of November as well. Big show there.
With a vocal crowd, they'll be allowed to cheer at that show.
Oh, that's going to be something really cool. That's going to be awesome. We got a big Noah show coming up, Fujita versus Kaito. We got Takao Mori, one of my all-time favorites in All Japan, challenging Kento for the Triple Crown. So we got a lot of good stuff coming up soon, a lot of good stuff coming up with Japanese wrestling. And keep it tuned in here on the Eastern Lariat. We're going to cover it all for you guys. Can't wait to be back on the next episode. But as always, thank you guys so much for the support of the Patreon, the Twitter, the show itself, Case's stuff, everything going on in the world of Japanese pro wrestling. And until next time, sayonara.
This is Dave and Nick. Listen to the bid. Bring a party hall, talking your water of red. Bring a party hall, what if...
Emerald, make that thing.